Welcome to the Red Phone Zone. This will be issue number 45.
45. Colt, how appropriate. Colt 45.
Colt 45. That is kind of appropriate.
Come on.
Yeah. So, we are now joining you this time around with, this is season 3, issue 1, or as I'm liking to call it, Red Phone Zone genres. Now, what am I talking about, Ethan? What am I talking about here?
We are sort of throwing caution to the wind in season 3, and we're going to start talking, having guest hosts on, and talking about movie genres and subgenres.
Uh-huh.
We're going to do a show for each genre, each subgenre that we've chosen off of the AFI website.
Mm-hmm. We decided to do I decided to do this, and Ethan was so kind as to...
And I said, sounds good.
He's like, I don't care. Just quit embarrassing me. No, but I decided that, especially with the launching of the Nerdvana Network, that there's other shows out there that, you know, cover things like gaming, video games, comic books, things like that, a little bit better than we did. Because, you know, I am not a comic book nerd or a role-playing game nerd. I'm a movie nerd. So I decided I want to stick with what I know, and so that's what we're doing here, is we're going to be discussing movie genres.
We have both at some point in our lives been accused of being movie snobs.
Oh, yeah. I've been accused of being a movie snob today as a point in fact. But, you know, hey, that's beside the point. I love movies, and I love people that love movies. I think that we don't watch enough movies. But, you know, speaking of movies...
Yeah.
Issue 10, wasn't it? Issue 10, we did a top 6 of our favorite movies of all time. My number one favorite movie of all time was The Empire Strikes Back, second Star Wars movie, or if you want to be silly about it, the fifth, you know, in terms of chronology. It came out in 1980. I was barely
alive.
Barely alive. I mean, I was born in 79, but and I'm not pretending like I remember when it came out.
Less than a year old.
Yeah, I was. I was less than a year old when this movie came out. Not pretending I remember it coming out. I've heard people try to make that claim that are a little bit younger than me, but I digress because I'm not going to go there. But I have never known a time in my life without The Empire Strikes Back. It's my favorite movie, and I don't know why I feel the need to justify myself. I mean, I think I've spent 44 issues here destroying my web presence and so much as like what I say is irrelevant. I'm not trying to pretend when I say The Empire Strikes Back is my favorite movie of all time. I'm not trying to pretend that means I think it's the greatest movie of all time. You know, obviously, you know, you have Citizen Kane, Battleship Potemkin,
Casablanca, any number of movies that are
Chairman of the Board.
Yeah,
the wonderful Carrot Top movie. No, I'm not implying that. Empire Strikes Back is a movie that just brings joy to my heart. I mean, I'm a Star Wars nerd.
Fifth degree
black belt.
Yeah, I think of most of the fans, Star Wars fans out there, Empire is generally the favorite of all of the Star Wars movies.
And, I mean, I've seen that. I mean, whenever I've seen, like, any argument, it's typically between this and A New Hope, you know, or the first Star Wars, or Star Wars, whatever you want to call it. And I was telling Ethan a little bit earlier today that something that I've noticed has happened to me is, like, when I was, like, 19 or something, first off, I was militant, and fuck you if you didn't like Star Wars. I'm trying to calm down. I'm not quite there yet. But, you know, I said, you know, Empire Strikes Back was the best movie, bar none, you know, whatsoever in the Star Wars series. I've calmed down on that, and I think that A New Hope is equally as good.
Mm-hmm.
Different reasons. And Empire just, you know, strikes a chord in my heart. And I said the same thing about The Godfather Part 1 and Part 2. I think they're equally fantastic movies. I personally prefer the second one. Doesn't mean the first one sucks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not one of those people that doesn't allow that wiggle room. But, you know, there are those people. So we decided we want to start out with something a little bit special this season. Ethan is on spring break, and so he actually looks awake. There's no dark circles around his eyes.
Yeah.
So
I'm actually addressing everyone with their proper names.
Neat. Over there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I decided to take advantage of it and try to do something a little bit fun. And we're going to do our, I guess it would be our first true episode come this Wednesday. We're going to be doing, and John from Bagged and Board is going to be our first guest host, and he's going to be joining in our discussion on the movie genres. And what we're going to try to do is whenever we bring in a host, we're going to allow them to choose the topic. Because not to toot my horn, but toot toot, I can talk about any movie genre there is.
Yeah.
And I don't want to... Yeah. And that's the beauty of it. So if you guys are listening to this and you want to... you want to be on the show, send us an email. I'm Aaron at redphonezone.com, Ethan at redphonezone.com, all kinds of ways to get a hold of us. But we're starting out with John, and the first genre we're going to be hitting is crime and gangster. Speaking of The Godfather, I have a sneaking suspicion that will be showing up on our list.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, those are pretty good movies. But before we do that, like I said, we're going to make this a special episode. We're going to do something that I think I'm on record saying that we would never do, and we're going to be doing a DVD commentary track. This time around, we're choosing Empire Strikes Back, and don't take that to mean that I'm pushing my clout here and saying, God damn it, we're doing my favorite movie the first time.
No.
Put the choice up to Ethan. I said we can do Empire or we can do Seven Samurai, which is his favorite movie of all time. He chose Empire because it's not 75 hours long.
Exactly.
And,
it is my spring break, but I'd like to actually go enjoy enjoy it and do other things.
And that's cool.
And yeah. I haven't watched Empire in a while at this point. So.
Yeah, I watched the summer when I showed them all to Rachel again. You know, she had seen them, but she doesn't. You know, they're not part of her lexicon, her daily lexicon, like they are mine.
Our friend, my not this Aaron, but my other friend Aaron,
the girl Aaron.
Yes, the girl Aaron. Has never seen any of the Star Wars movies.
Well, so, she's one of those.
So we're going to sit her down at some point and get her exposed to all of the Star Wars films.
Well, yeah, I would say definitely, you know, actually show them to her in true chronological order, sure. Meaning starting with Star Wars, not starting with The Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Because I could see people giving up on it by the Attack of the Clones. But, you know, hey, we'll see what happens. But, yeah, so that's what we're going to do. We're going to be doing a commentary track for 1980s The Empire Strikes Back. Okay, we're back. What we've decided to do is to kick it off with a little bit something special. We've decided to bookend this season with commentaries of The Empire Strikes Back, which is my favorite movie, and Seven Samurai, which is Ethan's favorite movie.
Yep.
Doing Empire Strikes Back first because it's a little bit shorter.
Mm-hmm. And ironically, both of these movies do have ties to one another in some shape and form.
How's that?
Well, George Lucas took heavily from Kurosawa's works and from obviously the samurai genre and samurai history for mm-hmm. the Jedi, for Darth Vader's look, even so.
Or very heavily from the character of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Exactly. Yes. So yes, I know. I believe Toshirô Mifune was originally
he was considered.
Was considered right for the role of Obi-Wan, but
he was considered
Sir Alec Guinness.
Sir Alec Guinness, and he did a fantastic job, regardless if he had a good time on set or not. That's neither really here nor there. So we're gonna go ahead and get right on into this. If you want to follow along, we're watching it on a copy of the 2004. Release. It's the first release of The Empire Strikes Back on DVD, and it this is the one that came in the box set, like the silver box set.
I think it was this was the first release.
Basically. Yes, this was the first release.
DVD release of it.
And we are watching the special edition. And if you want to throw us under the bus for that, go ahead. Send us emails, Aaron or Ethan at redphonezone.com.
Any consolation, we're going to watch the original cut of Seven Samurai,
as opposed to special edition with the song and dance number.
Exactly.
I don't know if it makes any difference. We are watching on a computer. I'm just telling you all this in case you want to sync up. But why don't we go ahead and get started? I'm on the front menu. I've already got my subtitles on. I've already got the music on. I think we're ready to go.
You? All right. Fired up.
All right. And in 3, 2, 1, pushing play. And hello, this is Aaron from the Red Phone Zone.
And this is Ethan from the Red Phone Zone.
Okay, about a year ago on our podcast, Red Phone Zone, you can check it out, redphonezone.com. Beautiful shameless plug there, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, so entirely.
Beautiful. We decided on issue number 10 that we wanted to do a top six favorite movies of all time. When I said that, I think it was probably my recommendation. I think I recommended damn near everything from the first season. There was one movie that was easily going to be my number one, and it was no surprise when it showed up on the show, and it was The Empire Strikes Back, the movie that we are watching right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and we just saw the THX logo, obviously, mm-hmm. THX being George Lucas's sound mastering technique that he developed. Obviously, THX goes all the way back to his student film, the THX 11384EB he did at the University of Southern California.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember who his instructor was?
I do not.
His instructor was Irvin Kershner, director of The Empire Strikes Back.
Excellent.
Uh-huh. So what we see here is we see what is famously known as the opening crawl. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. It's part of our...
He entirely did these in the spirit of the old movie serials, mm-hmm. that had these things, the rolling text in front of them all the time.
One of the things that's cool about this, it very much does, take from the Flash Gordons and stuff like that. It cost him dearly. Because of the fact that the first Star Wars movie was given a pass because everybody thought it was going to be a big-ass bomb. Mm-hmm. So the DGA allowed him to not put the credits until the end.
Right.
George Lucas, feeling that it would take away from the overall feeling of the movie, refused to do it. He was fined, and Irvin Kershner was fined over a total of $250,000, which George Lucas promptly paid and quit the DGA.
Which George Lucas promptly pulled out of the lint in his pocket.
Yeah, I mean, he has some money, and this movie was almost entirely self-financed. Yeah,
and I gotta say it, at least I've said it before on the show, that say what you will about George Lucas and his...
Everybody does.
And everyone says, they hate the guy. I mean, not necessarily hate the guy, but...
They don't like his business ethics.
A lot, but, the guy does... I gotta give the guy props for doing what he wants to do and not really bending to anyone else's will as far as what to do. He's mm-hmm. like, I want to make the movies that I want to make, and I want to do what I want to do in making them. That's why... I mean, you could say the Star Wars movies are, some of the best independent, quote-unquote, independent
It's so funny that you do that. You say, they're quote-unquote independent. No, they are independent movies. They're just heavily, heavily financed.
I do that quote-unquote independent movie in that most people don't think about it that way.
But it's the truth. They can wax poetic about it all they want, but they are fucking independent movies.
I would say The prequel trilogy is a bit more quote unquote independent than the original trilogy.
Well, the closest one that that there's really argument to would be A New Hope, and that was not necessarily independent because he did have to get money. The rest of them 100% independent.
Oh yeah.
I mean, unless you count the fact that George Lucas has a corporation, which I don't, because he's using his own money. Mm-hmm. And the idea with non-independent things is you're not spending your own money.
Yeah.
So we're entering in here on the planet Hoth. Oh. And we see, who is that, Luke? Yeah, we got Luke on a Tauntaun.
Luke on a Tauntaun. Now, some might, there's rumors that are going around, and we'll see what we can shed light on it, that they wrote this scene in because Luke or Mr. Hamill there, Mark Hamill, was in a motorcycle accident.
Well, that's one of those huge...
It's a big urban legend. Really.
It's a big urban legend that is not true, and I think you misspoke because it wasn't a motorcycle accident. It was a car accident.
Okay, car accident, motorcycle accident, something like that.
And it was on the set of, or rather, it was actually on the set of the movie that he was making in between. I think it was called Corvette Summer, something like that. It's true that once we get into the Wampa Cave, at this point, there's really no argument to it. When you get in the Wampa Cave, if you notice some of the shots, certain angles of his face, because there was a point where he had pieces of his nose missing, even.
Sure.
And But it was actually a happy accident, because and you can go and look at the screenplays that were produced, you know, prior to this, that right. that scene was in there. So, you know, call it a happy accident, you know, call it what you will, but it does not appear that it was.
There are a lot of myths about all of the movies that have come down through the last 30 years about this sort of thing.
There's Harrison Ford.
There is Harrison Ford. Arguably the one man whose career this didn't kill.
Sure. And I don't know how fair that is, because, no. you know, when it comes down to, I think I'll talk about it a little bit more, but, you know, Harrison Ford always gets, like, the credit. Well, him and Alec Guinness get credit for, like, the best actors in the Star Wars movies. I think Mark Hamill did a fantastic job, but we're going to get to that a little bit later.
Yeah.
My favorite.
Han Solo has brought in the. Basically made an iconic character that will endear from now until eternity.
Sure. So did Luke Skywalker.
But arguably so did Luke Skywalker. I think, though, Han is a bit more so.
Oh, I agree.
Much more of a timeless character.
I agree. I'm just, you know, I'm more talking towards Mark Hamill's performance.
Sure.
But, yeah, this is a scene that, this is a scene that I like a lot, because you can see Princess Leia, and you'll see it later when the base is being attacked. She's trying not to pay attention to Han. You know, there was that one little shot of her looking at him, but, well, it's still there. Now she's going to go back to her business, but she can, I don't know, it just feels like he can still feel her giving him that stare, that death stare. So we have General Rykan right there, I believe is his name.
Mm-hmm. And I believe this was filmed, this stuff was filmed in
Switzerland.
In Switzerland, there you go.
Yeah. Switzerland,
And you'll see a lot of English actors running around in this that actually pop up in other Spielberg and Spielberg-Lucas co-productions.
Sure.
Point them out later when the Nazi shows up, but
John Glover?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or not John
not
Glover.
John Glover.
Julian Glover. Julian I was right Glover, the first yes. time.
John Glover, entirely different person.
Yeah. I don't know.
Also cool, but, you know.
Sure.
But the, and I know one of the impetus behind having them go to Hoth was because the first movie was mostly brown colors and you know, very
brown,
sterile. Brown, black, you know, and, the, you know, you had the Death Star gray, and you had Tatooine, obviously, and they wanted to go something very different. And so they went to a nice planet Hoth, where it's a lot of whites and bright color and very bright. Not I want to say bright colors, but just it's just a very bright atmosphere.
Yeah. Another part of it, you know, that I've heard, and you know, this could all be, you know, bullshit internet hearsay, is George Lucas wanted to do it against white because there was a lot of cheating involved with using space, because you could cover up the matte lines.
Yeah.
Not very easy up against a white background if you have those big black lines. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, they did a commendable job.
And they worked insanely hard at fixing those lines. In fact, I believe they got an Oscar for their achievement on it. So
they got actually all of the original trilogy got not only Oscars but special achievement Oscars as well. I mean, they got, you know, the sound, and I'm not remembering off the top of my head, but they got, you know, sound, visual effects, shit like that. Sure. But I know for a fact that Empire Strikes Back and A New Hope both got special achievement Oscars. And, you know, rightfully so, because these movies, you know, just did insane things for the world of special effects.
It actually won an Oscar for Best Sound and won a Special Achievement Award for Visual Effects.
Right. Dennis Muren.
Dennis Muren, Brian Johnson, Richard Edlund, and Bruce Nicholson.
Yeah.
And it was nominated for Best Art Direction and Set Decoration and Best Music Original Score.
Mm-hmm.
But then, this thing has this movie's won a number of different awards, and obviously we're watching the special edition, so the effects have been even further cleaned up.
Yeah,
from the original. But the original movie, I'm just throwing some quick numbers out there. But adjusted for inflation, this Empire Strikes Back is the 12th highest grossing movie of all time.
It's also the least successful of all the Star Wars films.
Yes, its original gross is now I believe this includes the
it includes special edition.
Yeah, well the original edition grossed $209 million. The re-release
that's inflated.
No, that's
not.
Okay.
I was going to say.
It was re-released on November 19th, 1982, and grossed another $13 million.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1997, the special edition grossed about $67 million. Now, adjusting for inflation, the original adjusted for inflation, is $786,426,000. Falling in right at...
It's a lot of gumballs.
Beating out by $2 million.
Why don't you go ahead and pause that? Why don't we talk about probably the most controversial scene in the special edition? We are now at the Wampa Ice Cave scene.
Yes, the Wampa scene, right.
What do you got to say about it, Ethan?
Well, they reshot... They got a... I believe they actually got an actor, put him in a suit, and filmed more scenes for the Wampa attack. And a lot of people thought it kind of looked hokey.
Okay, yeah. This is one of the scenes that I don't care about, like the special edition scenes.
Sure.
I mean, I think there's, you know, lower hanging fruit to complain about. But this one, you know, to me, I think it looks fine. I've seen dumber looking monsters in all kinds of other movies. To me, it's more of a, it's more of a question of, you know, tone. I mean, it was, you know, maybe a little bit scarier to see, to the way it was originally filmed, where there's a lot of quick shots and just like a puppet, like up close. But I would almost like to see, you know, and, you know, shoot me in the head. I would almost rather like to see a yet another special edition of it.
Sure.
Cut with maybe a marriage of the two, not as much of the Wampa, but not as little as we had. Sure. Theatrical.
Well, and we are going to get a re-release of this in the next few years. In,
2016.
2016 for a 3D release. So
we got to make it through all the prequels in the first one before we hit this one. But
That's true. So, you know, and Lucas always, I mean, technology is always going forward. So Lucas might very well go in and revise again. You know,
you never know.
It's his prerogative. He can do it. So.
Yep. That's the way I see it.
I mean, he owns these movies outright.
Yes, he does.
So, I mean,
not the first one, but he has full reign of it.
Sure.
So we got R2-D2 portrayed by Kenny Baker. I met him, kind of an asshole, but that's beside the point. He was also dealing with a lot of mouth-breathing idiots, probably asking him, you know, how to use the Force and where he keeps his lightsaber and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was an old cantankerous dude, and I like me some old cantankerous dude. Scene right here we're seeing where Luke walking away from the cave was filmed out of Irvin Kershner's hotel room. You know, they had it in the middle of a snowstorm, and so they end up throwing Mark Hamill's ass out there and making him walk, so they did not lose a day's worth of shots.
Very nice. Now, the Wampa animation was actually
Wampa or Tauntaun?
Tauntaun, excuse me. Tauntaun.
God, I'm a nerd.
Was photographic effect stop motion, which nowadays you rarely ever see.
And we got from Cheers fame, John Ratzenberger showing up in the old Star Wars episode.
Yep. So now we know where he was before Cheers.
Yep, right, he was hanging out in Hoth. I can't remember that character's name. If you'd asked me 10 years ago, I would have known.
And of course, you mentioned Kenny Baker and R2-D2. We've got Anthony Daniels as C-3PO.
Very nice guy.
I've met him as well. Yeah,
short,
thin, and incredibly English.
Very English.
Yes.
Very gay.
Very gay. Very nice guy.
Comes across very gay. I don't know if he really is.
When I met him, I got a signed picture of him as C-3PO from the first movie, from the first prequel, from Phantom Menace.
Right, when he was the skeleton.
And he laughed because he said I was getting a picture of him naked.
So. Yep, that sounds like him.
But he was very nice.
I mean, I thought he was really nice. My impression, I mean, it's not much of an impression. And I have met quite a few people from Star Wars. My impression from him, I mean, it's a dumb impression, but it was just that he was short. I had no idea he was that short. He's, you know, maybe 5'5". And I don't know. I mean, I didn't expect him to be huge, but he's really short.
Yeah.
Ah, Sir Alec Guinness.
Yep.
Why don't we regale them with the tales of Alec Guinness's death and what happened because of that in our little group of friends?
Of Alec Guinness's death in our group of friends?
Yeah, amongst Tyler and myself. And you don't remember that? Tyler knocking Anthony over when you were sitting at the computer, and I think Anthony was over there, Tyler was over there. You said, "Hey, Alec Guinness died," and Tyler was all, "What?" And he like knocked Anthony over and jumped over the couch and ran over to you. You called me to make sure I was okay, and I believe I did the same thing with you when Kurosawa died.
Yes.
So, So too bad. Great performance. You know, obviously, you know, it's, you know, getting legendary to the point now where his, you know, his disdain for the project.
Yeah, I mean, people pretty much, the mainstream audience remember him for Obi-Wan Kenobi. And, you know, those of us who have seen him in other things, obviously, most notably, Bridge on the River Kwai.
Sure, or any of his many David Lean productions. Oh, yeah. Great Expectations, yeah. Oliver Twist.
Yeah, I mean, and really, you don't, a lot of people don't understand what a big deal it was for Alec Guinness to be in these movies.
Got the movie money, because yeah, it added some credibility
because
to it.
Because he really didn't do sci-fi.
No.
I mean, yes, people say, oh, but they had Harrison Ford. Well, Harrison Ford wasn't a big name back then.
He was nobody. Uh-huh. He had been in American Graffiti.
Right. And you know, they had Van Helsing himself.
Well, Peter Alec Guinness was first.
Yeah, but he'd been doing, yeah, you know, he's done all the sci-fi stuff. Really, Alec Guinness was just a huge, huge coup for them to get on the production.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back for the last two movies, albeit, you know, in spiritual form.
Yeah. And begrudgingly, you know, they got it with the contract. Mm-hmm. But, you know, hey, you know, I don't care about all that because I'm happy with what we got. And, you know, say what you will about the prequels. Obi-Wan was so much fun to watch in the prequels. Granted, that was Ewan McGregor.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
still a great character. One of my favorite movie characters of all time.
Yeah, Obi-Wan is awesome.
Sure is. Okay.
And what is it with the fat pilots?
I don't know. Maybe it's all that armor. They're sitting around in their spaceship for months when they're, you know,
Eating too many Cheetos.
That was,
you know, it all goes back to Porkins.
Yeah.
He died in.
Whew, he's a big dude.
I hope he was a fat one.
Rogue Two. Hmm.
And of course, this is the really cleaned up special edition again.
Yep.
I keep going back to that, but
Just looks amazing, doesn't it?
And looking at it now, I mean, it's 2011, and this special edition was done back in
1997.
Although they did clean it up for the DVD release again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. The special editions, they've even added stuff. They've added stuff and subtracted stuff from the original special edition that had been out on like videotape, stuff like that, to the DVD release. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's the truth, because this is the second special edition at this point.
Mm-hmm. It's the Bacta tank.
Yeah.
And Luke in a diaper.
And the 2-1-B medical droid, one of my favorite action figures. It's a fun little action figure.
Yeah, it took me forever to realize what a Bacta tank was.
Okay.
I didn't know that that's what those were called.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been playing way back when, the original Dark Forces computer game, and you were picking up Bacta tanks and healing, and I was like, it's a Bacta tank.
Yep.
Apparently they're that. Well, in Dark Forces, they're really tiny. They're about the size of a Coke can.
Ah.
That would explain why I
have no idea. You would just have to drink it. General Rycan thinks it's dangerous for any ships. And we haven't talked about Chewbacca. Peter Mayhew. Well,
what a Wookiee.
A Wookiee.
We've both met him.
Yeah.
I've met
him. God damn, he's tall.
Yeah, I met him. He was still sitting down.
Yeah.
And he was taller than I was.
I met him standing. I'm like,
And talking, you know, elegantly British, he was so polite.
Yeah.
Very nice.
John. Horrible teeth.
Yeah, nice. Horrible teeth.
Horrible
and,
teeth.
You know, very much a giant Wookiee.
Yep. Nice guy. Very gentle.
Have they ever said what a Nerf is, really?
Space cow.
Space cow? There are space cows.
Sure, why not?
Alrighty. Well, he's not scruffy looking. Now, when did, looking at Harrison Ford, he has his scar.
Mm-hmm.
Really a telltale thing is he has always had that in his filmmaking. Although in some early productions, I believe they covered it up with some makeup here and there. But
he's had it since he was 17 years old.
And we're talking, of course, the scar on his chin.
Yeah, obviously. Well, not the scar on his ass. I mean, that's something else entirely. No,
only a select few have seen that.
Yeah, and we're the lucky ones. But yeah, he got in just one of those stupid car accidents when he was putting his seatbelt on, went out the road, and hit a telephone pole. And, you know, now it's part of who he is. I mean,
exactly.
It's funny for a character like Harrison, well, Han Solo. I mean, you know, you kind of want that you know, history on his face, so to speak. You know,
it makes him have a more interesting face, even though, I mean, Harrison Ford's got an interesting face anyway.
Sure. But, you know, but just a little bit more.
That does tell some more stories about him.
Stations 11 and 38. 1138. A recurring theme in the Star Wars movies, going back to THX 1138, the student film of George Lucas.
Of course, in New Hope, it was Cell Block 1138.
Cell Block 1138.
And what was it in Jedi, do you know?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. Maybe we'll figure that out one of these days. Ah, the Imperial Probe Droids. One of those neat little things about Star Wars. That's one of those little pieces of technology I always found funny. I always love Chewbacca in the snow because his nose is all covered in snow. It just reminds me of a dog.
And looking at it now, Mayhew's got to be the warmest person on set at that point, I think.
He always said that his suit was not hot. You know, it was very comfortable, he said.
And we get into the great capital ships of Star Wars. Compare it to what you will of Star Trek and Battlestar Galactica and whatnot. Is Star Wars always had this sort of naval feel to it? And,
Very much so. Battleship
aircraft carriers, and of course, I believe this movie is the first one where we get to see the Super Star Destroyer.
Yep. Trivia. Do you remember its name?
The Executioner.
Very good.
I was just about to say that.
There we have Mr. Darth Vader himself.
Who's, as I mentioned earlier, his look is based on samurai design, which is why you often see artwork and various things depicting him in correlation with the samurai, because that helmet is very much a samurai-style helmet.
Obviously portrayed in voice by James Earl Jones. Portrayed in stunts by Bob Anderson, legendary sword man.
Another myth that goes around, maybe we can shed some light onto it, was that, of course, the actor that played Darth Vader in body,
David Prowse,
didn't know that he was going to get dubbed over.
Mm-hmm. That is a truth for the first movie.
Yes.
He'd be pretty stupid to not realize it in the second one. I have a story about him being dubbed over, as a matter of fact. I got a chance to meet him at the Celebration 2 that was in Indianapolis, Indiana. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get his autograph, but I stood in line with a friend who did. And we got up to him, and my friend asked him to tell him a story about the... You know, about, and he sat there and he was quiet for a second. And he says, well, you know what? When we were doing like Empire Strikes Back, you know, I had to recite the lines, you know, just so that there's a little bit of pacing and things like that so it could be dubbed over later. He said, but it didn't necessarily have to be, it didn't have to be verbatim. He just had to have like the beat and, you know, the length right. And so a little bit later when Admiral Ozzel comes on and says we can't chase him into an asteroid field, there's lines of asteroids do not concern me, Admiral, only what is it? Asteroids don't concern me.
We'll find out in a bit. Anyway.
Yeah, asteroids don't concern me. Excuse me. Asteroids do not concern me, Admiral. I want that ship. And he came out with it at one point with hemorrhoids do not concern me, Admiral. I need to take a shit. And blew a couple of different takes on it. And that was a fun little thing. Probably wouldn't show up on a Fox Family DVD, but you know it's a fun little anecdote.
But it would be an amusing little Easter egg to find someday.
Yeah, that would be. I'd love to see that.
Now this actor right here, who's
Bruce Spence? No, that's not Bruce Spence.
I recognize him from an episode of Fawlty Towers.
Ah.
A few things I remember seeing him in, where he plays an American who wants a Waldorf salad.
Ah.
What does this have to do with Star Wars? Nothing. But I just wanted to mention that. And there he is, right there. Villain from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade himself.
Met him also. I was getting his autograph for a friend, and I came up to him, and my friends who wanted the autographs, his name was Kyle, and I gave him my ticket, and I said, you know, give me an autograph. And he said, well, I didn't say give me, I'm like, blah, blah, blah. And he said, which one do you want? And I pointed to the picture, and he picked it up. He said, who should I make it out to? And I said, Kyle. And he said, oh, wow, I have a son named Kyle or blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, actually, it's for a friend. I just blurted it out, not thinking about how that might come across as insulting. I don't want your fucking autograph. It's for somebody else. And he reacted to it quite coldly. And he's all like, oh. And he pushed it forward to me, and I just kind of looked at him, and I'm like, how do I save this? And what have you been doing lately? He's like, actually, I'm performing, I think he said King Lear at the Globe. I'm like, the Globe? And he's all like, yes. Have you ever heard of Shakespeare? And I'm like, yes, I've heard of Shakespeare. The Globe is his theater. I said, that's obviously much more impressive than Star Wars. He just kind of looked at me and waved me on. You fucking asshole.
Oh, but, that's too bad.
Yeah, but General Veers is a fun character.
Yeah.
Worst line ever in Star Wars. Two fighters against a Star Destroyer from good old Hobby right there. Worse than anything Hayden Christensen or Natalie Portman says, even in the prequel trilogy. Yep. Wow.
Oh, man.
Ah, these are the Swedish Army reservists. Mm-hmm. Did not speak a word of English. And director Irvin Kershner had to go out there and mimic what he wanted. He couldn't tell them, so he'd be, you know, showing, you know, oh, you're looking that way, and there's a thing coming up that looks like an elephant, and, you know, actually reacting to the recoil from the rifles. Giant boob nipple gun.
Giant boob nipple gun.
First transport.
This movie was sort of the first one to expand the lexicon of ships in the Star Wars universe.
Everybody
saw transports. So.
Yep.
But in the first movie, we just had a few different ones. At this movie, we really get a feel of the different ships that are available in Star Wars.
That's the truth.
I mean, obviously, the X-Wing is the big one, but
TIE Fighter is pretty big too.
Obviously, the TIE Fighter, yeah.
Death Star. That's.
Well, it's the biggest. it's some would say
size wise,
but yeah, you know, but you some moon. Say size doesn't matter.
It's a space station.
They're lying, of course.
But size matters not.
No, size matters not.
Correct. Judge me by my size.
And of course, this movie is where we first get the AT-ATs, and I believe even AT-STs show up in this one as well.
Yeah, they're in the background.
They're in the background. They're much more to Jedi, but
yeah, they're more of a close quarters vehicle.
I always dug the AT-ATs.
I always liked the AT-ST. AT-ATs are badass, but I don't think I could drive one by myself. And AT-ST you could. AT-ST are the two-legged ones. AT-ATs are the four-legged ones. Yeah, it's a very unique movie vehicle. Movie anything really. That's a big walking. Camel-y looking thing. Steady, Dak.
Dak, the sacrificial buddy.
Get shot.
It's Biggs in the first one. It's Dak in this one.
I just think this is... I just love this scene. I always have.
Mm-hmm. This has always been a great scene. You know, kicks off the action of the movie, and really, it's, you know, you're half hour into the movie more or less.
Well, that's your major action scene, really. Yeah. I mean, you don't have a big ass star fight at the end of it like you do at the end of the.
And this is predominantly the big showcase of the visual effects in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Again, with the swept helmet look.
Yeah.
That was reminiscent of samurai.
That is the truth.
Of course, and this was an interesting the speeders here are interesting choices of ships because you have a pilot and a gunner.
Oh yeah,
which really doesn't show up very often anywhere else in the Star Wars universe because the X-wings.
No, absolutely not. It shows up quite often in like World War II.
World War One, World War Two
military. You know, weapons and vehicles and things of that nature, you know, it was a heavy influence on this.
Yeah, and
most of the, like the guns, like that gun,
yeah.
Like any of those guns are based off of, you know, real German Mausers, typically.
The M1s, that sort of thing.
And, yeah.
And obviously the stormtroopers, the whole moniker stormtrooper comes right from World
the
War
Nazis.
II. And you know, no one can argue that the Empire isn't, you know, a fascist state anyway.
Well, I mean, and that's exactly it. And George Lucas says as much in the Episode 3 commentary.
Exactly.
So.
And, of course, there is our good friend...
Wedge.
Wedge.
Wedge Antilles.
Wedge Antilles.
Played by Dennis Lawson.
Who survives.
Yep.
Who is the other survivor, goes through all the movies. And
plays a huge role in the expanded universe.
I believe is related to one of the Obi-Wans.
Yeah, he's Ewan McGregor's uncle.
There you go.
This guy is more responsible than anybody for Ewan McGregor's career. And I'm not necessarily implying Star Wars, but, you know, he just thought of, you know, Uncle Dennis, the cool actor who would show up wearing, you know, beads and, you know, sheepskin jackets and not wearing shoes. And Ewan McGregor just thought that was a life for him. So, right. Yeah, now, he's also a nice guy. I've met him as well. Not Ewan, but Dennis Lawson. I think the biggest name I've met from these was, Carrie Fisher.
Carrie Fisher, yeah. Mm-hmm. You had a cigarette with her.
So. Yep, I did. I accidentally wandered into the VIP area when I was trying to find a cigarette when I was bored waiting for my friends, and she didn't kick me out. I thought that was decent of her. And, you know, we talked. She talked a little bit about Prozac, and then I left, and that was that.
She has made quite a career of her from herself of script doctoring.
And, yeah,
working on
Postcards from the Edge is yeah. You know, was her big thing. I believe that won a Razzie for worst movie of the year. I think it's not a bad movie. I've seen it.
It's been forever since I saw it.
Yeah, and we're gonna have a little bit more of that. You know, you have that chemistry between Han and Leia coming up here in a moment. You know, more of that, her looking at, you know, the screens and what's going on, but you can feel she's really just looking at Han and, you know, worried about Han. And, you know, I just think it's like some of that stuff that, you know, makes me enjoy this movie just a little bit more than the first. You know, I mean, I've said it 100 times and I don't feel like arguing about it. There's your ATST. That, you know, yeah, these movies definitely have sci-fi elements in them. I strongly feel they're more fantasy movies. And, I'm more interested in the human element. You know, like, whenever we played Star Wars Trivial Pursuit, your only chance of ever beating me was to bog me down with the ship questions, if you remember correctly.
Yes.
Because it's stuff that doesn't interest me.
The one time that I did beat you, it was because of that. So.
And I know that, and that's my weakness, and I think I strengthened myself up a little bit, but it just doesn't interest me as much as stuff like the Force or lightsabers, and, you know, that's actually kind of a technology thing, but I like the characters, I like the stories, and I like the mythology, and I was a big mythology fan. And,
you know, it's been talked to death about the Joseph Campbell, the heroic, the hero's journey. That
yeah,
sort of
Man
thing.
Of a Thousand Faces.
Right. That these movies are pretty much textbook examples.
Oh, sure.
But the they're fun films, and you know, anyone who says otherwise
is, I don't know,
on crack or something, I guess.
Yeah.
But.
Up here coming up when Luke takes down the I'll just try to remember when we get there, but yeah. So we have Han going back, showing his love for Princess Leia, making sure she's okay, and look at her not looking at him again. I mean, I love this stuff. I mean, it's classic Hollywood.
Yeah, chemistry is very important for especially with these two characters.
Oh yeah,
and really it was the chemistry, really, they didn't play much on the chemistry in the first film. And obviously, when they made the first film,
it was certainly there.
It was there, but not so prevalent. But you have to also understand that in New Hope, they weren't sure they were going to get Empire and Jedi. I mean,
on top of that,
they were lucky. They thought they were lucky to be able to do New Hope.
And on top of that, they weren't sure they were going to, do the brother sister angle with Luke and Leia. So you know, there would have been a fun love triangle going on there. And there still kind of is.
Yeah. And this whole bit here is very. I always felt was real reminiscent of World War One style fighting.
Oh, sure.
And where you're running around across no man's land.
Yeah. So. This scene right here coming up where Luke, he chops that open and he throws the bomb in there and it blows up and it falls over. It's the only AT-AT scene that is not filmed in stop motion. It's actually, it's live action. It's just, it's like a miniature AT-ST with miniature explosions in it. That's actually real time with it tipping over. Right. The rest of it is all stop motion because you see back there, that one's not moving.
Right.
So, that's a giveaway sign on it.
Yeah, it's an interesting aspect of filmmaking is what really draws the eye.
Yeah.
Sometimes if you want to, if you've seen a movie numerous times, if you want to try something different, watch the movie, but look somewhere else.
Yeah.
Like, force yourself to look.
I've watched this movie muted before.
Yeah, like in this scene, normally you're going to be watching the AT-AT there, Go, look at the guys running on the ground instead, and... You'll see some interesting things.
There was another special edition thing, a little bit bigger boom.
We like big booms.
Yep. Oh, there was the Wampa room that actually that's something I want to see added when they do the, you know, the I'd love to see it in the Blu-rays even. The famous scene of Han ripping the sign off the Wampa room and stormtroopers going in there and getting torn apart by him.
Yes, I remember that scene.
Yeah.
I remember hearing about that scene.
Yeah, I've never seen it. I've seen pictures of it. Actually, there's a shot of it in the trailer for this DVD. But, you know, and just like, you know, a single shot towards the end.
And here we have the stark contrasts of Darth Vader's black against the white of Hoth.
Mm-hmm.
And even the white of the stormtroopers there that are with him. I think it's just a great...
Quit being a nerd. They're snowtroopers.
Snowtroopers, whatever.
Jeez.
And this movie also is where the Millennium Falcon sort of gets its bad rep as far as a big bucket of bolts.
Sure does.
Because it worked fine in the first movie.
Yeah.
To an extent, I guess works fine in the third movie because it's been fixed. But this one, it's a wreck.
Yeah. And that's like one of those, you know, it's, you know, very much where that used space thing comes from. I mean, people refer to Star Wars as used space. Everything's not all shiny and new.
Well, it's, you know, Star Wars was the first time they sort of showed a science fiction setting or a future setting or, you know, anything like that looked lived in.
Yeah.
And obviously, it was a big influence on later movies.
And, oh, absolutely. Blade Runner.
Blade Runner. Huge Alien, Blade Runner, all those, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, to an extent, even films from that point on mm-hmm. really went out of the way to say, hey, wait a minute, people are actually using this, so why should it be all sterile and nasty?
Sure.
Of course, the cockpit has changed a bit from the first movie.
Oh, yeah. They took down the fuzzy dice.
Yeah.
Tink, tink, tink.
I remember seeing in an interview with Harrison Ford in the first film where he sits down in the cockpit and he asks George Lucas, okay, well, how do I fly this thing?
Yep.
And Lucas is like, just flip some buttons.
Yep.
And Peter Mayhew had to figure out a method of flying it so it looked authentic. And
oh, yeah.
You know, it just shows really the kind of an actor you're working with on that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, Harrison Ford, I mean, especially lately, he gets a lot of, you know, he takes a lot of grief for, you know, not being like that consummate actor. But, you know, he does. I mean, he does do a lot of these.
At this point, he's earned it.
Yeah.
He's earned his career.
He doesn't care.
Point, so, yeah, exactly.
He just doesn't care. And that is going to be the last time we see Han Solo and Luke Skywalker on screen together until the beginning of Return of the Jedi, unless you count the carbonite frozen Han Solo at the end of this. I'm sorry if I'm spoiling this for you, but if you haven't seen this movie, good God, man.
Well, one, if you haven't seen this movie, why are you watching it? Why is it the first time you're watching it, or you're watching it with our commentary?
Sure. So. There's good commentary on it.
I'm sure let that sink in. Yeah. And of course, now we have the battleship going after the skipper.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get into one of the big famous scenes in this movie is, of course, the asteroid field.
Ah, with the shoe and the potato.
The shoe and the potato, and all that stuff shows up numerous times. Plus, you know,
kitchen sink.
The dead TIE fighter pilots that come, you know, flying out.
Yeah, that's always fun.
That really you have to go frame by frame to see.
Take a bit of action. See, this kind of stuff's awesome. I mean, I don't know if I've seen it before.
Well, they take into account inertia,
yeah.
Which is real nice, you know.
You know, obviously, like the biggest, I don't know about the biggest, but one of the hugest, you know, errors of this movie would be the fact that you can hear this stuff because there is no sound in space. But, you know, I'll let it pass because they also got laser swords and magic.
There is that. And honestly, they really don't know. So, I mean, one thing some scientists have theorized is that you would hear, depending on the propulsion of the ship, you might hear some exhaust as it goes by. But
well, you know, and they also say that, I mean, I don't, and trust me.
You're trying to put scientific realism into a movie with a giant Wookiee.
So yeah,
giant
that's not
man.
It. Hand me the Hydra spanner. But yeah, I've always wondered, you know, because they say that there's nothing for it to bounce off of and there's no gravity and blah, blah, blah. What if you had a big-ass ship like that? You know, couldn't the noise bounce off of that? I mean, I don't know. I'm not a rocket scientist.
See, in this movie, they sort of get a good layout of what the Millennium Falcon what the Millennium Falcon is really like.
You got a pretty good layout of the first one.
Yeah. I mean,
had the cockpit, you had the mess hall, and you had the two gun turrets.
Yeah. And notably, you don't see any of the gun turrets in this one. Mm-mm. So you do see them again in Jedi, but not in this.
Never tell me the odds. And there's your potato right there. Yeah. I'm sorry, you guys, you're not going to be able to see it because we're not recording this visually. But I did.
And there goes the pilot.
Right yep.
There,
yeah. And sparklies.
And it's all sparkly.
And there was the shoe.
And the funny thing is, you know, we were talking about scientific reality. Asteroid fields are nothing like this.
No, but, nothing. I mean, space is a big fucking place. It'd be pretty easy to get out of an asteroid field.
An asteroid, I think we can avoid that.
Yeah, I mean.
But there's no excitement in that.
Yeah, where's the fun in that?
This is an exciting, swashbuckling sci-fi fantasy.
Space is really big, and it's also not just straightforward. There's up, there's down,
exactly.
360 degrees.
And that was a nice thing that this movie did is you had, this movie did the New Hope did as well, is you had the three dimensions, you could go up, down, you could roll to the right and sort of play with the way you do things. Because yes, these are like dogfights,
World War II dogfights.
World War II dogfights, but ultimately it's, you're in space, you can go in any direction you want.
Now that's a big ass asteroid. I mean, that'd be bigger than the Death Star, wouldn't it? Look how big that fucking thing is.
No.
I don't know. And we're going to go rest. I guess everything's okay now.
I guess so.
Wow. That's a great shot.
Wow, that's a great shot.
Me too.
And now the mood lighting has come into to the Millennium Falcon.
And now we're going to go to Dagobah. We've always maintained that if R2-D2's dialogue were actually... heard, like in English, this movie would be rated at least PG-13.
Exactly.
I am not peeing. I'm actually pouring a drink. All right, so we got R2-D2 throwing a fit. R2-D2 is actually sound designer Ben Burtt had a young child at the time, and he recorded a lot of his, oohs and ahs and baby noises and ran it through a synthesizer, and he was able to play out the different notes on a keyboard. That's how they got the sound for R2-D2. One of the most R2-D2's, noises, his voice, all that good stuff is one of those just iconic sound things of all time in films.
And he being a major character in all the movies, he has to feel like he has a personality and that he has a range.
Beautifully
and
done.
When he's just beeps and whistles, that can easily just kill that character. But the sound design did a great job giving him a humanity, really.
Oh, yeah.
Giving him a soul.
Not a bad soul for a trash can.
Exactly.
I mean, whenever time I'm going silent in here, I just catch myself watching the movie and forget that I'm trying to, shed a little bit of insight into it.
It is your favorite film.
I absolutely love this movie.
And it is one of my favorites as well. I love it.
Yeah.
And into the drink. And now we get into another thing that Lucas likes to do, especially in Star Wars and any of his creations, is monsters.
Weird
and strange creatures that you don't really, in this one, you only get a glimpse of.
Yeah, you get the biggest creature in all of the Star Wars movies, the space slug.
Yeah, that's true. That's
gigantic fucking creature.
Second, I thought you were going to talk about the fish thing here.
No, the fish thing.
No, that's not the biggest thing.
No, that's
the
space
first thing
slug.
I think of is like the Rancor, and then you're like, no, the big space slug.
The Sarlacc could eat the Rancor. It's bigger than it.
Yeah, there's that.
So, yeah, the space slug is the biggest living thingy bobber.
This is also cleaned up through the special edition.
Sure. All these scenes where you see the close-ups of R2, like going around and the little, like this stuff was filmed in George Lucas's unfinished swimming pool in his backyard.
Nice.
Nope. So that's where you actually get the nice muddy water. Because all of this was a soundstage.
Yeah.
And built 5 feet up.
Built 5 feet up, filled up with nice, disgusting water after a while. Because, they fill that sucker up with water and then they're filming there for
6 weeks.
6 weeks. It's going to get nasty.
Oh, yeah. And that's something they complained about quite a bit. By they, I mean Mark Hamill, because Mark Hamill is the only actor listed on the on the call sheets for, you know, months and months and months and months. Well, I mean, like 2 months. And he said that it kind of got depressing because, mm-hmm. you know, he was, you know, by himself, which is kind of weird to think about because he's got R2 and he's got Yoda, but... Yeah. That, you know, that's just a testament to the technology of these films, because I'm like, there's two other fucking people there, but there's a trash can and a Muppet.
Well, it's a testament to Hamill and
and that's where I'm going to get into
actor,
it.
Yeah.
I mean, I always felt that Mark Hamill got a handed a bad card with this, because of his performance, we believe in R2-D2 and we believe in Yoda and, you know, yeah. they're a trash can and a Muppet.
And it's hard in any movie to just carry a scene by yourself and let alone carry a good chunk of a movie by yourself.
Oh, absolutely. And, man, can you remember just your imagination running wild when you were a kid seeing this?
Uh-huh.
Man, Darth Vader, he's not an android. He's not a robot. He's actually a dude in there.
Yeah,
man.
I remember when I was a kid, I was scared. Also, well, this movie is also where you get the big black egg that he sits in.
Yeah.
And that was lots of, what's that all about?
Mm-hmm.
I think coming up here soon, we get to see the Emperor for the first time in the prequel trilogy, or in the original trilogy.
Yep.
We'll talk about that, I'm sure, then.
I enjoy him. No, we need to talk you to the fuck.
Nice. The panels back there always reminded me of a light bright.
Yeah. Yeah, sure does. These are some fun scenes. I mean, there's nothing great about them, but they're just fun.
Well, and even, you have these different things going on with Luke on Dagobah and them here on the asteroid, plus what's going on
with the Empire.
It really is more of a...
personal story.
That personal story, and it's very serialized.
You
feel, it's like, okay, here we're going to have, what's the cliffhanger leading into the next chapter?
Yeah. That man has charisma.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And he's like that in everything.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, some people have charisma to a certain degree. I've never seen him not have just amazing charisma with anybody he's with. Okay. So we got R2-D2 and Luke Skywalker.
About to run into one of the most memorable, iconic characters of Star Wars
in
Star
Wars
history, or film history.
Film history.
I know when people joke about him, joke about Yoda being a Muppet, but...
he's not a fucking Muppet. I mean, sort of, but no.
Well, voiced by Frank Oz, yeah.
Performed
by Frank Oz, all that.
Wasn't built by the Muppet people, so he's technically not a Muppet. Exactly. He was actually built by Stuart Freeborn. His face was made to look up like his own face, Stuart Freeborn's face, with a little bit of Einstein in there. And it's funny, seeing a picture of Stuart Freeborn and seeing a picture of Einstein, you can absolutely see it.
Yeah. And one of the speaking of the ties that these movies have with my favorite film of Seven Samurai is Yoda is heavily based on the main character from Seven Samurai, the old samurai character whose name escapes me at the moment, but I'll find it out eventually.
Uh huh. Yeah, but he's also, he's just such an archetypical character. I mean, and, that's something that, I'm surprised these movies get away with as well as they do, is, like, relying so heavily on archetypes. Mm-hmm. And, you do that now in a movie, and the movie gets fucking attacked. And, when you do it, what, 31 years ago, and, it becomes a icon.
And the character that I'm referring to is Kanabe Shimada, played by Takashi Shimura.
Yep. The old dude.
And it's more in
fish stick.
Yes. Oh, fish. A frozen fish stick.
Frozen fish stick. As A lot of people, I don't know how many people are aware of it, but George Lucas was so impressed with Frank Oz and Yoda that he spent a lot of money trying to get Frank Oz a Oscar nomination. And damn near got it, but, you know, in the end they decided that they just can't call puppetry, you know, acting. And, you know, while I disagree with that, I can't disagree too much with it because I see their point. And the movie did get, you know, effects, or rather Oscars for special effects and stuff like that, and which is, you know, ultimately what Yoda is. He's an amazing special effect.
And a lot of people, you know, dog on the digital Yoda from Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith as sort of not having a soul. You know, but ultimately we're just talking two different technologies.
Yeah, I mean,
I think just the fact that Frank Oz manages to just with the mannerisms of his voice and of course the physical performance that he can deliver with the puppet is just a testament to a good performer.
Well, I mean, absolutely. And the thing about it is like the way that the digital Yoda was created and performed. I mean, he wasn't, you know, built like he was a, like most of like the new creatures were created like they were creatures with flesh and blood and, bones and shit like that. Yep. Yoda was actually created in such a way to where he was a digital armature. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, with the same, you know, structural integrity as the Yoda puppet, to the point of where his pivots were the same as, you know, Frank Oz's hand. And and they also did stuff like cloth simulations because Yoda was made out of specific, you know, cloths and
materials.
Which
and I was just looking there as sort of a good way of lighting and how they portrayed the Yoda character is direct lighting on his eyes and how difficult that would have been.
Oh, because sure.
He's a puppet, obviously. So.
And, you know, at the same time, I mean, like, that's like one of those things, like, you know, it's once in a generation where somebody's able to, like, so successfully, you know, replicate life. I mean, we have it with Yoda, and we also had it with Gollum from The Lord of the Rings. And the thing that always gets people is those eyes. And it's just, you know, so tough to do. So tough to do. And I think you're 100% right.
The eyes are the windows to the soul.
That's what they say. And if you're just you're a Muppet or a bunch of ones and zeros, it's tough to do.
We were talking good chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably one of the most quintessential good chemistry scenes in the movie.
Between this and the carbon freeze chamber, I mean, we're right there. Sorry, Leia. Or sure, Leia. It has been a while since I've seen this. I don't think I have it memorized anymore. Now, what the hell is that thing she's working on? I've always wondered. Looks like a viewfinder.
Yeah, like a periscope type of device of some kind. I'm sure someone out there could probably tell us.
Oh, sure.
The question is do we care?
I don't. I'm just curious.
Because I'm not paying attention.
Yeah, I'm not paying attention to the gizmos.
I'm not paying attention to the gizmos. I'm paying attention to the actors.
No, I've seen it enough to where, you know, like I've said, I've watched these muted and I've looked at other stuff. And I think that came up in my viewings.
Like the blinky lights above her head there.
Look like red Cheerios.
Mm-hmm. Fruit Loops.
Mm-hmm. There you go. That's even better than red Cheerios. I'm a nice man. No, you're not. Mm, yeah.
I believe this will be the first on-screen full kiss. May have had a bit of a peck at the end of New Hope.
No, I don't think it was there. I mean, I think they hugged.
I think that was.
That was certainly their big, you know, shit.
Their first.
Should have done that kiss.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of my favorite things in all of Star Wars. Darth Vader talking to his people on hologram, and we pull away from a shot of a Star Destroyer getting hit by an asteroid, and one of the guys reacting as if he's getting blown up. I mean, that's just those little things. It just makes these movies so much fun. Mm-hmm. Yes, Admiral. What is it?
Yep, and now we get to see for the first time. Obviously, if you've watched the prequel trilogy, you've seen it, but this is the first time that anyone really ever saw the Emperor. But
well, sort of, kind of.
In this special edition, it's not what they saw.
No.
The original was an old woman superimposed with like a monkey and all this.
Yeah, well, it was a chimpanzee's eyes.
Yeah.
And Clive Revel was doing the voice, and if I remember right, it was... Oh, maybe Stuart Freeborn's grandma, somebody like that.
Yeah.
But here we have Ian McDiarmid himself, portraying, you know, the Emperor Palpatine. Obviously, his name is never said over the course of this trilogy, but they say it all over the place in the original trilogy. One of the more interesting characters.
And they also changed the dialogue in this scene from the original, where he actually mentions Anakin Skywalker and sort of goes a bit more in depth with it.
Yeah. It's nothing major, though.
I mean, it's nothing change. It's not like huge, no huge changes. This is the one that they did the least changes to.
Because, you know, it was the closest to perfect.
And I really want to talk about the holograms and their look and how you get those scanning lines like they're still a tube TV or a VHS type of thing. And I think that adds some great character to Star Wars. It's something very unique to what Star Wars does.
It's something I've always enjoyed about these movies is I always have liked the holograms. It was something that at first I was loving in the prequel trilogy because they were doing, you know, holograms of the Nemodians and then, you know, holograms of fucking droids, and then it just started to get a little bit old. But, man, I always liked seeing holograms. Thought it was cool. R2 looking in on Yoda getting rained on.
I wonder how much it sucked being inside R2 with all the water coming down on him.
Chances are Kenny Baker wasn't in there at that point. Actually, he would haven't been because the only one that Kenny Baker was in was the three-legged model, and he had one of the legs drawn up. See if there was, you know, if the leg was up in there, there'd be no room for Kenny Baker. Yuck. Good. Now we must eat. Come, good food, come.
Yes, the inappropriate, Star Wars. Out of context Star Wars lines.
Yes. Man, I love Yoda. He's just one of those characters that, man, I'm glad I never lived in a time without him. I mean, he's just, at the same time, it almost would have been fun to meet Yoda when I was my age.
You know, he's one of those iconic old master characters. You know, you have Yoda, you have the old master from Kung Fu. You've got Mr. Miyagi. You know, I mean, Yoda is up there and is a constant. Is constantly referred to in this master, you know, master student relationship.
Oh sure, I mean, it's to the point where, you know, the hell they reference fucking Yoda in the Karate Kid remake. You know, I'm like a Jedi and you're like Yoda.
Yep.
Ben, I can be a Jedi. That's one thing that did disappoint me about the prequels. They never really explain the whole Ben thing. I mean, obviously it's not that important, but it's just kind of weird.
Yeah.
You know, and it can also be written off so much as, you know, he was hiding.
He needed a name. Yeah.
He needed a name.
Although you figure if he was changing his name, he would change the Kenobi part, which is a bit more.
Yeah.
Which can be a bit, how many Kenobis are there, you know?
You know, it's like Bob.
Plus, you know, the whole thing about him hiding on Tatooine.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Bob Hitler.
We're not here to poke holes in the Star Wars.
No, because we like Star Wars.
They're entertaining movies.
Yeah. Good old Yoda. Excitement. Ha! The Jedi
Crack is not these things.
Yeah, so, you know, he's also infinitely quotable. You know, do or do not, there is no try.
Yeah.
Man.
War does not make one great.
War does not make one great.
And obviously his
Around the Survivors of Perimeter Create, what?
Exactly, Around the Survivors of Perimeter Create. His mixed up grammar, of course.
Oh, yeah. What's it?
It's widely parodied. In
what is it?
Form.
It's verb subject noun or something like that. There's a word for it. It's actually very rare on Earth. There's very few dialects that actually, you know, work like that. But it is something that's true. I mean, there are dialects that work
like
that.
Makes him a memorable character.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it also lends credence to the idea that, you know, he's an alien and maybe that's not his first language.
The only time you ever see TIE bombers actually bombing.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, at least we're seeing it at all.
Exactly.
Minox. I always thought they were gross looking.
See, now they're in the cave, everything must be all right.
Everything's all right now. Whoa, what was that? Hmm. Holy shit. And here we see the Minox chewing on the power cables, huh? Oh, shit. Good old silence. Man. Sorry, I just keep watching the damn movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Dead air.
This is such a good...
neat scene, isn't it?
It's just a fun little scene, yeah. I mean, one of my fond memories of The Empire Strikes Back actually is not the movie, but my dad... brought home the audio drama.
Oh, the those audio are drama fun.
Version. I remember going to sleep to them when I was a kid on occasion, and I remember this scene vividly, you know. And, it was a lot of fun mm-hmm. when you were a kid. I remember when the Minox first showed up, it was really scary.
Oh, I bet.
It's really cool.
You know, see me, I remember growing up, you know, watching this movie, loving this movie, same with Jedi, but I didn't really, really, really get into Star Wars until I was, I don't know, 15, 16, mm-hmm. and, you know, now I've been into it longer than I wasn't, so, I mean, that's kind of crazy. You know, but my parents, you know, I don't think we even had them on tape.
This is also probably one of the only times we ever see these tape, right there is
Chewbacca shooting
his bowcaster.
Mm-hmm.
I believe
that is it.
That is the only time we see him shoot that.
Yeah. He shoots the place up in New Hope, but he's just using like a stormtrooper blaster.
Yeah. This movie is probably the first time we actually see the bowcaster. I don't think it's...
No, it's in it.
Is it in New mm-hmm. Hope? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, this is just one of those... scenes that I admire because I just don't have that kind of creativity in me to have them land on an asteroid in the middle of space and go into a hole that happens to be inside of a giant space slug. I mean, mm-hmm. that's just such a neat concept. You saw some of the mat lines right there. At least I saw some of the mat lines right there. It's a space station. Oh, wait, no.
It's Meg.
Yeah, it's Meg. that was done with a little hand puppet.
Yep. It's the biggest monster, and it's the simplest one, you know? It's a sock puppet.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here's the Yoda backpack.
Yep. One of my favorite figures. Well, it was actually two figures, because there was the Luke and the Bespin fatigues, and then there was the Yoda. They came with the backpack, and I think he came with the stick and the Yoda and maybe something else. I don't recall. Flows from the Force, but beware the dark side. That's another big one. Big line. Mm-hmm.
Excuse me there.
I mean, yeah, I'm in awe of Mark Hamill in these scenes. I mean, talking to a fucking sock, and yet, you know, you believe that it's real. I mean, you believe that it's a real character, and I do know that there was like a fun little, you know, like one of those on-set anecdotes that, you know, I don't know how true they were, but, you know, Irvin Kershner kept fucking up and giving direction to Yoda, the puppet, instead of, you know, into his radio to Frank Oz, who was down below the soundstage. The soundstage was built.
And he couldn't hear him.
Yeah, he couldn't hear him because he was just, you know, talking to the damn puppet instead of into his microphone. And Frank was all like, dude, I'm down here. He's like, oh, yeah. You know what? You know, I hope it is true because that's, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, he's such a believable character. Such a believable character. Such a wonderful character. And then this. Is this the cave scene? Oh, yeah, that's the cave scene. One of the weirdest, most ambiguous scenes in all of Star Wars. I was actually kind of disappointed there was nothing even comparable in the prequel trilogy that was all weird like this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
Yeah, as a kid, I remember being really scared of this.
Oh, yeah. It's fucking scary. I mean, Darth Vader, and you're like, ah, shit, what the hell is
this? Obviously, I was less than a year old when this came out, but when it was reissued in the theaters in 82, I'm sure my parents took me to see it.
Oh, I'm not sure of that at all. I'm definitely positive I saw it in the re-release in 97, but I was, 17 and I had a job and a car.
Exactly.
But, at this point, I don't remember. Definitely remember watching Return of the Jedi a lot as a kid. This one I know I saw a lot also. Not positive I saw the first one until I was a teenager. I mean, I'm sure I did, but I just don't. Mm-hmm. I don't remember it. I do know at one point not really remembering who Obi-Wan Kenobi was, because, I'd seen these, this one, Return of the Jedi, so many times that, and you know, Obi-Wan's in them, but barely. So I always thought that was kind of a fun thing. Yeah, so what's the symbolism here, Ethan?
Oh, well, he's going into the... He's facing his darkest fears that he's going to become Vader, something like Vader.
Mm-hmm. There's a snake. Are you scared?
That's the third time we've seen a snake in this film.
Are you scared? Did you pee your pants?
I just did.
Three times?
Yeah.
All right. Whoa, there's a...
And that's a Komodo dragon.
Komodo dragon. Don't let it bite you.
Oddly, they are on... they are indigenous to Dagobah as well.
Yeah, Dagobah and the Komodo
Island. Komodo Island.
Yeah. Strangely enough.
Odd.
But yeah, I mean, obviously I don't remember seeing this scene for the first time, but could you imagine this in the theater? Oh shit, Darth Vader found Luke. Oh God.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people sort of
poo-poo on this scene
as far as, it's useless, there's no point in having
it. But I think it's neat.
I think it's a neat scene, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's showing that, Luke is supposed to be like this, great, hope for the future in terms of, the the Force, and then you have, Yoda talking about this kind of stuff happening, but you actually see, some of that happening with Luke, going to show you that, Luke is, has the ability to be a great Jedi. And then, boom! There goes his fucking head. The first of many decapitations in Star Wars.
Yep.
Jesus Christ, they put a lot of decapitations in the...
And that's the end of the series right there.
Yeah, there you go. See?
Oh,
let's see what, okay. We're going to see what he looks like. Holy shit!
Holy crap! I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you know, there had to have been people out there thinking, "What is it? A twin? Is Darth Vader Luke's brother?"
When I was a little kid, I really didn't understand this.
No
this
hell
scene
no.
either. So.
Hell, I'm 31. I don't really understand it too much.
We more understand the symbolism now.
Well, yeah. I understand that. Well, bounty hunters. We don't need their scum. Yes, sir.
Now we're going to be introduced to, at least originally in the original trilogy, this was our first introduction to the iconic character that everyone fell in love with of Boba Fett.
I mean, sort of, kind of, but not really, because he also showed up in the holiday special.
That's true.
But yeah, this is our first big screen viewing of him.
This was a lot of people's introduction to it, because the holiday special was only shown once.
Why don't you talk to us about Boba Fett? I want your opinion on Boba Fett, Ethan.
I've never been a fan of Boba Fett. He gets killed by a blind guy with a stick.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a gun.
Mm-hmm. And he tracks down Han, but, he ultimately was Jabba's bitch, and just never thought he was that cool of a character.
See, and I disagree with you. I've always thought that Boba Fett is cool, but, to me, it's none of that... that stupid, vapid, fanboy horse shit that people are writing up.
Yeah.
And, a lot of the things that people like about Boba Fett comes from the extended universe.
Yeah.
I don't give it that, because I like what I see in the movie.
Yeah. And over the last several years, I've softened on him a bit, but it's a lot of that's just from the history of the Mandalorians that you get from the video games and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I dig the Mandalorians from the video games, but the... Boba Fett, still not too horribly impressive.
Like KOTOR?
Yeah, Knights of the Old Republic 1 and 2.
Those are fun games. I like him. Obviously I don't really go overboard with him, but, I like the purpose that he serves, a nice disposable villain,
Yeah.
And Jeremy Bullock as well, very nice guy. Mm-hmm. I met him twice, matter of fact.
I saw him just this last weekend.
Oh, was he up there?
He was at Comic-Con.
Neat. How's he doing?
So is Little Bo Vet.
Oh, Daniel Logan. Mm-hmm. How old's he these days?
Oh, 33 or something.
Is he really? Well, see, well,
he's about four times taller than he was.
Oh, there. Sure. He'd be at least 20.
Mm-hmm.
When did episode 2 come out? That would have been 2001.
Also met Tom Kane. 2002. As the voice of Yoda.
I know Tom Kane is.
But anyway.
I've actually only watched a little bit of that.
Another. Now he's levitating rocks up and everything. And
mm-hmm. Groovy. And this is where we have, you know, we're more. Geez, that looks like a potato. But it looks more like. Or not looks like. It's more one of those situations where we're seeing the power that's in Luke. I mean, you know, he's just raw talent, but he's, you know, seeing shit into the future. And, it leads more towards Obi-Wan and Yoda, you know, looking at him as the last hope. It's fun stuff. Or the new hope.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit.
I'm sure at this point they
so
are.
So certain are you?
At this point, it,
one of my favorites.
The set is probably rancid at this point.
Oh yeah. Well, I don't know. It depends on. I don't know if I'd agree with you on that, Ethan, because I would think that this would. I don't know. You could be 100% right. This could strike me as something that would have been one of the first things that was filmed because of how difficult it would be.
Now, see, I'm looking at it from set dressing in the sunken X-wing. Because
and I am too. I'm just saying that would be that'd be the big set. I would think that this would be the big set piece in terms of the production of the movie. To say, okay, we need to get that pulling the damn X-wing scene out of the way because that's gonna be a bitch.
Right.
You know, worry about all that dialogue and junk later. One of my favorite scenes in the movie.
Oh yeah, easily.
Actually, one of my favorite scenes in the saga.
Yeah.
Look at those eyes. He's believing. Oh shit. And Luke is unable to lift the X-Wing out of the water.
And Yoda's all like, pussy.
Pussy. So certain are you. Maybe Yoda's best little bit of dialogue in the entire saga coming up right here. Judge me by my size, do you? As you should not. You're a motherfucker or something like that. I don't remember exactly how it goes.
And, of course, they cut out the scene where Yoda pimp slaps him with a cane.
Yeah, that's my favorite part, when they cut it out. Mm-hmm. The Gamir stick. Not the cane. See, I was always a big fan of, obviously, if you guys are watching this, then this is, what, 2011, and the prequels came out in, what, 99? Yeah, I was actually... And...
Yeah, definitely one of the most memorable scenes in the movie.
Yeah. You know, I'm having a tough time talking about this movie, and it's almost because, well, it's cinematic perfection to me. I mean, obviously, you know, it's far from perfect. We have pointed out some little continuity or even physics problems, but that's not the point of these. I mean, this isn't a documentary about physics. I mean, this is a story about good versus evil, father versus son, you know, technology versus nature, and, you know, it's just such a timeless story. It's just such a great story.
Yeah, when this movie first came out, it sort of had a mixed bag of reviews.
It did.
When it first came out, so. Now it's, you know, fans and people really say it's the best, but back when it came out, it was not necessarily the
not the general consensus, not by long bit. I have been spending a lot of time lately watching Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel, and I wasn't aware of it, but Siskel was a huge Star Wars fan. Did you know that?
I had no idea.
Yeah, loved Star Wars, and it was actually, you know, kind of sad, or, you know, assholes out there would say otherwise, but he died 2.5 months before episode one came out. And he was, you know, very excited about those movies coming out. And he said in his Return of the Jedi review, he can't wait for the prequels to come out. So it's too bad. They were actually very kind about this movie in their review of it. Obviously, you know, they're seeing the superiority of it, you know, to at least a lot of like the normal movies coming out at the time. And, you know, I mean, what's not to love? I mean, you got wizards, princesses, crazy monsters, aliens, spaceships, laser swords, sword fighting, swashbuckling. I love it. That is why you fail. Such a great scene. Wow, that's a great shot.
Wow, what a great shot.
Wow, that's a great shot.
And the you know, characteristic of Star Wars was the the different scene transitions there, you know, the circle in, circle out, the crossfade, that sort of thing.
You know, which was pretty huge at the time, but, you know, now that kind of craps on Windows Movie Maker and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, it wasn't, the way they're doing it, the way he did it, it wasn't huge at the time, really. It was something that was...
Well, it was huge in its simplicity, is what I mean. I mean, because it was, you know, a 50-year-old technology.
And that, it's now such a staple of Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
Think about it.
Darth fucking Vader, man.
Of course, we haven't really talked too much about Admiral Piett there.
Oh, yeah. Good old Admiral Piett. What about him? What do you want to talk about him?
Well, he's probably one of the quintessential characters of Star Wars that you think of. He goes from this movie all the way into the next one.
And doesn't die till the end of Jedi.
Exactly. And as a character, he sort of goes full circle.
Sure.
You know, in this movie, he's a bit timid and shy. In the next one, he's all cocky.
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, he's a fucking admiral by that point. That's awesome.
Of course, this is probably one of the best... The best little things here is the Money Falcon, you know, riding off with the trash.
Oh yeah, this is another scene. You know, like when I was talking about the space slug, you know, that, you know, makes me envious of the imagination there. I mean, you know, hooking onto a ship and floating away with the damn with the trash. I mean, that's ingenious. And then having the bounty hunter being a step ahead of him, and waiting in the trash. I mean, that's just... That to me is just beautiful storytelling. I mean, it's really thinking it's really thinking everything through really well.
Yeah, and actually the audio version of the movie that I listened to as a kid was actually the book and record set that was released by Buena Vista.
That'd be fun to try to get that on MP3.
Yeah. But because there was, I didn't want to confuse people, because there's also a radio adaptation that was done from National Public Radio.
Yep.
But we really can't talk about Star Wars or really this movie and not talk about John Williams and the music. You know, music from movies like this really get to you. They are the Mozart. They are the Beethoven of our day. You know, in 200-300 years, they'll be listening to the Star Wars, the suite from Star Wars and music like this.
Yeah.
And going, you know, this is classical. This is beautiful music. And a lot of people don't think about that.
Yeah.
First time we see Slave One right there.
Yeah, there it is.
Flying away with the garbage.
Flying away with the garbage. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, yeah, I just...
A lot of random garbage there.
You know, it's, you know, we sit there and we talk sometimes about, you know, people that, you know, preceded us, you know, Charlie Chaplin or Alec Guinness or,
sure,
you know, any of those people. And, you know, we need to, you know, take a moment, I mean, if only a moment, to sit there and say that it's kind of cool that, you know, we're living in John Williams's time.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a god in movie, you know, in movie scoring. And, you know, and obviously he's got his critics. I mean, people like to, you know, say that he steals a lot. But, you know, I don't care. I mean, I've always liked the work that he's done. I mean, dude's got 4 Oscars, 3 Oscars, something like that. And he's still working as far as I know. He did the Harry Potter, first couple Harry Potters, right?
Oh, yeah.
I know he didn't after a certain point. But, yeah, I mean, I know that he did do that. He's obviously got a big relationship with...
He has 5 Oscars.
Does he? Okay. So. More than I have.
Been nominated, has 72 other awards and been nominated 120 times.
Damn.
For various things.
It's a lot of awards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, he's a living legend. And how old is he these days? He's not as old as he looks, but he's he can't be that young.
He was born 1932.
So that's pretty fucking old. 77?
77. So yeah. Still working.
That's not bad.
Still doing his thing.
Yeah.
But he's one of those guys that has been contributed to pop culture in just the music sense.
Oh, sure. Jaws.
Indiana Jones, Superman. I mean, all these themes, all this music that is just, you hear couple bars of it and you know exactly what it is.
Yeah, and I think it's cool that, you know, there's going to be people, mm-hmm. you know, after John Williams is gone, you know, new people discovering his music. And so, you know, I really like the music in Star Wars, and I also like seeing the music in, you know, Indiana Jones. And you know, I wonder who did those, and going to each one individually and realizing that, oh my God, those are all done by the same person. And that'd be a fun day of discovery. You know, I love moments like that where I get a, you know, discover a great artist.
Here's one of the few changes they did for the special edition release is the coming on into Cloud City.
Yeah.
And those are just strange ships for...
Yeah, the cloud cars.
Once again,
I think you referenced the Family Guy thing. I mean, that was a good little moment in there where they're arguing about who's driving. And I remember I had a Taco Bell toy based off of the Cloud City. It was one of those little magnet things that floated in between.
Yes,
it was cool.
Floated, yes.
It was a cool little Taco Bell toy. And I got it when I was, you know, 20, but who cares? It was still cool.
Okay. And this is the added stuff from the
special edition.
That, you know, it just adds a little openness to...
scope.
You know, a big scope, to Cloud City.
I'd say that my favorite additions to special editions in all the movies would be when they actually get into Cloud City instead of like the weird, you know, 70s Art Deco art hanging on the walls.
You have to expect to see Logan's Run going on.
Yeah. That's one of those little things that it's a beautiful thing. And mm-hmm. it's one of the reasons why, you know, I have no problem with special editions. And also, I'm not going to have a problem with them because, you know, when it comes down to it, it's George Lucas's call. And if he wants
to come to realize as well with these characters that they, for predominantly for over half the movie, are in the same set of clothes.
Mm-hmm. That is true. And Chewbacca wears the same damn clothes all the way through all of them, including in episode 3.
And never wears pants.
I do know that, you know, over the course of the movies, that was a note that they got from the production. You know, maybe throw, you know, a pair of khakis on the Wookiee. And I'm, you know...
Now we get some color in the film.
Yeah.
Good old Colt 45 himself right there.
Billy Dee Williams. Yet another guy I've met. Very cool. He's a... tall. I didn't know that. Taller than me. And, you know, I'm 6'2", so that means he's at least 6'3". And, yeah, so... he's one of those guys that I really... You know, some people like to give Lando shit. I like Lando. I think he's an interesting character. Yeah. Kind of hate that 70s stash, but, you know, I'm not going to hold that against him.
Like Burt Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds and shit. It's beautiful.
It is.
And then, you know, there's more of that fun little, you know... witty banter between the two. Oh, you still hanging around this loser?
Well, it's another, you know, scoundrel type of character, you know. You have these classic type of characters in this movie, you know, these from the serials that you have. You have the swashbuckling captain.
Sure.
You have the sly friend from his past here that's a, you know, it's pretty much a pirate, you know.
Well, it's kind of telling that, you know, you're dealing with a movie with the Jedi, and the Jedi are all but extinct, but at this point you've met three of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you have the scoundrels, which are all over the place, and it takes until the middle of the second one to meet another one of those.
Yeah.
It was definitely a good idea.
And this is an example right there of the stuff that they've been doing, that the special edition did. It really opened up.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise you had just these sort of random
art
on the wall. Artsy, weird...
triangle
ball things going on. It really just didn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's one of the, I have actually heard. I mean, obviously, you know, you've heard people complain about like the song and dance thing in Jedi and Greedo shooting first, but I've actually heard people complain about this, and I think that's just nitpicking.
That's nitpicking and just people trying to find something to complain
about. I like that. I mean, that's like a beautiful reason to do it. Hichuta.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the changes people do in the trilogy of mm-hmm. the special edition release, a lot of people sort of give it some grief, but
yeah.
ultimately it's all a lot of small stuff that I don't think changes the movie.
Yeah.
It's stuff you can ignore.
Yeah.
It's like if you don't, yes, Greedo shooting first, really, who cares?
I don't care.
Moving on. It's like, are you going to get hung up on that and let it destroy your childhood?
The only two things
that's
that...
That's your problem.
It certainly far from destroyed my childhood.
Oh, yeah.
But I only had two problems with anything, and one of them was the song and dance thing in Jabba's Palace. My problem with that was not that it was a song and dance. That, I think, is a fucking hysterical idea. Yeah. I just thought it felt out of place. I mean, it felt like it was added in there. And then I also don't like the scene when, you know, after Luke, you know, tries to sacrifice himself, jumps off the bridge after Vader's revelation, you know, he screams. I didn't that, but that has actually been edited out for this version.
Yeah.
They took that back out because that was obviously a bad idea.
Remember the only bit that I ever had a huge issue with was the celebration at the end of of Jedi.
Coruscant.
Coruscant.
See, and I disagree with you, so...
That's, you know, it's all, ultimately, it's, you know, who cares?
Yeah.
You know, moving on.
Well, I mean, you know, yeah, there probably might be a battalion of stormtroopers killing them, but it could also just be a testament to how much everybody hates, you know, the fucking Emperor.
We talked about sort of the military aspect here with the X-Wing and whatnot, mm-hmm. but I think the outfits that the pilots wear are very reminiscent of sort of Vietnam era.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. Especially with the padded collars. Mm-hmm. So I think it's weird that since he's been dead, he's been shaving because his beard's a little bit shorter. You know, but hey. And his hairpiece moved quite a bit. So, you know, hey, that I can see.
Yeah.
He's got to take it off and put it back on. I don't know why he would decide he wanted to stay an old man, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
What the hell is that noise?
There's his eyes again lit, and, you know, again, they an amazing job just giving life to that.
Oh, sure.
To this inanimate object here, you know, this thing.
Possibly my favorite shot in all of Star Wars coming up right here. I just really like the lighting in this.
Mm-hmm. And you don't notice that Ben has disappeared in the back. Too. Mm-hmm. It's a nice little fact.
I like how it went from, you know, blue to red, almost representing, you know, good and bad and that kind of stuff. And, yeah. you know, to me, it's not even that. I don't care about the symbol. I just think it looks nice.
These are all about symbolism.
Sure.
So, I mean, things like that are thrown in here, and, mm-hmm. and it's nice. And Irvin Kershner, you know, knew what he was doing.
Oh, sure.
You have, plus also, you know, cinematographers and mm-hmm. The various techno aspects of this movie alone are staggering.
Oh, yeah. And that's another added shot. Mm-hmm. That's a good added shot, too.
And the director of photography was Peter Sosinski.
Yeah. Man, I'm surprised it took me this long to do this. This movie was... story was obviously by George Lucas, and it was written by Lee Brackett and Lawrence Kasdan. Now, Lee Brackett being added into there... What was more of like a being nice thing, because she turned in her final script and then died. Mm-hmm. And then, Lawrence Kasdan, who's right. obviously gone on to do other things, has, you know, he basically wrote the final script. And, you know, we get into that part. This was a, you know, somewhat troubled production. And, you know, George Lucas says, you know, he's kind of said he kind of likes it when he has trouble productions because it almost feels like a good luck charm. But, yeah, Lee Brackett died over the course of the filming of this movie, and so did, oh, God, I can't remember his name, and I don't want to kill somebody that didn't die, an associate producer, maybe Robert Watts, I can't remember, died, and they ended up shutting down production for a day because of that. There was... obviously, the snowstorms in Sweden that set everything back a little bit. And, you know, these just, you know, when you take these to exotic locales, you know, where you have stuff like Tunisia or Switzerland or Dagobah or anything like that. I don't remember.
It was John Barry.
There we go, John Barry. He's a composer.
Mm-hmm. John Barry, who was the second unit director.
Yeah, the second unit director. died of meningitis, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. Died of
meningitis during production.
Mm-hmm. I just couldn't remember his name, but yeah. So I mean, we had two, associate producer, which is, obviously that's not George Lucas, that's not, Kirshner, but that's a big loss. Same thing with the screenwriter. Mm-hmm. So I mean, that's too bad because those were, they both did, things that were talented. Ah, the Ugnaughts. They got a smell.
Well, you got to give work to those midgets somewhere.
Mm-hmm. So are we going to, they're going to go ahead and have lunch with Mr. Vader. See, there's some remnants of the art that we're talking about right down there, mm-hmm. on the bottom of, under the windows. I find it funny that, as we get older, there's going to be people that have, kids really, that aren't going to know what the hell we're talking about.
Yeah.
I see it as plain as day, like the differences in these, although I'm getting more and more used to them as I watch the DVD editions more. Oh shit, there's Vader and Boba Fett. That made for quite a few posters. A lot of people liked the idea of Vader and Boba Fett in the same shot because, the two big badasses of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, as far as the stormtroopers in the back there, a lot of the stormtroopers are played, at least on the heftier sets, were played by off-duty Marines.
Mm-hmm. I know that, the main stormtroopers, ones, well, I don't know about main, but the ones you see, taking falls and actually, mm-hmm. Doing things. Like, anytime you see a stormtrooper in any of these three movies that does something that you are aware of, it was played by Peter Diamond. He was the stunt coordinator on the movie, mm-hmm. and also a guy I met, very nice dude. I think he passed away about a year ago or so. But yeah, he was pretty cool. I don't remember, and I don't even know if he died. I could be entirely wrong. But I know that he played stuff like, that stormtrooper. He played the sand troopers. He played scout troopers. He played, mm-hmm. Pretty much all the key secondary characters were played by Peter Diamond.
Yeah, he died in 2004.
So that was a lot longer ago than a year or two ago. But I do know that he did die. He was a nice guy. I met him at the celebration. He died in 2004?
Mm-hmm.
So I met him
March 2004.
Shit.
It was March 27th, 2004. So
I met him in February. I met him 2 months before he died.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Well, that sucks. Maybe I killed him.
Maybe you did.
How'd he die?
You bastard.
Maybe he caught a heart attack from me. He caught old age from me. He was an old guy. And we have the scene of Chewbacca working on C-3PO. Yet another one of those, ingenious scenes, because it, really establishes the, as much as we care to grow and, or rather grow to care and love 3PO and R2-D2, they are robots.
They're robots, yeah. They don't necessarily need to be human, mm-hmm. Humanoid creatures at this point,
One of the more darker, fucked up scenes in Star Wars. The torturing of Han Solo for no reason other than to torture him.
And Vader's just so interested in it, too.
And this is a good scene there.
And also, one thing that they changed in this version we forgot to mention was Boba Fett's voice.
Ah, yeah.
They replaced it with
Tamora Morrison.
Tamora Morrison.
Yeah, it was originally done by the guy that played the... It was not Jeremy Bullock. It was the guy that played the bartender in the All in the Family. Not All in the Family, but the one after that took place in the bar. That bartender guy was the voice of Boba Fett. I don't remember the name of that show. I don't remember the name of that. But whatever that damn show was called, that was the guy that did Boba Fett's voice. But they went in and they changed it to Tamora Morrison. If you don't know who that is, he was Jango Fett in the episode 2, and he was the template for the clones, so the stormtroopers. There you go. Thank you.
With the voice.
Yep. But yeah, that's who that guy is. But yeah, that's why I've heard people bitch about that, and fuck them. I it makes sense to me. It's continuity or continuity, however you would want to say that. We're not going to start off the season with that again.
Oh, God, no.
Oh, God, no. They didn't even ask me any questions. I feel terrible.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously this movie is the darkest of the original trilogy.
Sure.
Because, I mean, and it's meant to be the middle act.
Oh, yeah.
You're supposed to have Yeah, it's funny. That's to be all doubtful. And
I've heard people complain about that. You know, there's no clear beginning and there's no clear end. I'm like, dumbass, it's part two. That's how it works.
Well, and you also have to understand, you know, as we said it before, it's, when they did New Hope, they didn't know they were going to get another two. So it had to be standalone. It had to feel like a complete movie. They did this one. They knew they were doing Return of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. You know, so they didn't need to do that.
Yeah. Leia and Chewie. You notice they never say Boba Fett over the course of this whole movie. They always say the bounty hunter or bounty hunter.
Never names in Jedi.
Yeah, Boba Fett. Where? Well, then they yeah, they say it all over the place in fucking two and three. Probably, yeah. Well, two.
Yeah,
he has it in three. Shoot his ass, fucking Wookiee. You know, I really wish that society and fashion would revert to where you could wear capes again.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, kind of like the styling man's muumuu. Just cover stuff up. Oh, good job. There's some more of that silence that we're so fond of. Mm-hmm. And you know, I this whole freezing scene part, I love the lighting and I love smoke. I love the atmosphere. Such an interesting looking scene. And it's supposed to look like hell.
And the little guys, of course.
Ugnaughts.
They add just this sort of gritty, dirty feeling to the whole scene. Mm-hmm. And obviously the red lighting.
And we got Lobot back there, played by John Hollis, if I remember right. Seemed like he was in Superman as one of the Kryptonians and, you know, some other stuff like that. I can't remember his name.
Yes.
John Hollis, I think is his name, yeah.
Credited as, quote, Lando's aide.
But his name is Lobot, because that's what the action figure said, damn it.
Yes.
And that's what I get my information from, is action figures.
It's a good place to get info from.
Yeah. I've actually heard people complain about how Luke's able to land so easily when Han and Leia aren't, and I just like that's people not paying attention because you know, Vader's all like, dude, let make sure they land okay.
Uh-huh. Where's the frozen in carbonite?
I keep talking about just like great original ideas, and you know, that's one of them. I mean, such a neat idea.
Yeah, and how I think some people have, you know, Han Solo frozen in carbonite as their, you know, coffee table.
Oh, I'd love to have one of those.
Nice. Although I can't imagine he'd set anything on the coffee
table. But you'd have to put a piece of glass over it. Yeah. It would have to encase it.
Yep. And you know, with Boba Fett there and how, you know, how big of a character he's become and how the Mandalorians have become such a huge thing.
Yeah.
You got to wonder how really sort of random his look was, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sure they just threw it together.
And they did, and you know, and it kind of has like that thrown together look to it. And
that fan culture has really built a huge meaning behind every little thing here and there.
And that's one of the cool ass things. I mean, that's kind of cool though. I mean, that you know that they let those things happen. I mean, do you honestly think that we would have things like, I mean, we didn't see Lobot showing up in the prequels, but we did, you know, but we did have Boba Fett. I mean, that's, you know, George Lucas reacting to fans, and I think that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Especially making all the stormtroopers Boba Fetts. That's kind of neat too. And then we got that line, that fucking line. I love
that
you.
They
I
shot
know
that scene over and over again. Finally,
never felt organic
until he just said that. It worked, you know. Sometimes you just got to trust the actors to know their characters.
And
there you go.
Boy, he did there.
Also,
and,
you know, we've talked about how Harrison Ford's just the consummate actor right there. Mm-hmm.
And like they did it in such a way to where Harrison Ford was the only one of the actors that was not contractually obligated to come back for Return of the Jedi, and so they shot in such a way to where, you know, he could die. And actually, at some point, Harrison Ford and Lawrence Kasdan wanted him to die. They thought that, you know, he's got no mama, he's got no planet, and you know, he can, you know, give one up for the cause. But George Lucas and I, and you know, call me a bleeding heart, but I think he I think he chose correctly. And mm-hmm. you know, you don't want to see your main characters dying. I mean, this is a cartoon, and you know, yeah. Bugs Bunny never dies. I mean, yeah, sometimes
it's serial. You know, it's that old pulpish, you know, storytelling.
Sure,
and you don't have the heroes die in that. And then we have just a wonderful amount of atmosphere going on in this whole frozen in carbonite scene.
And here we got coming out Han Solo frozen carbonite. One of my favorite things. Obviously, everything's my favorite thing in this. I keep saying, this is my favorite, this is my favorite. Han Solo frozen carbonite, just such a neat idea. And man, the good prop idea.
Mm-hmm.
Man, you should have been able to buy those things a little bit cheaper, and I'd have at least two.
Oh, and the Han Solo frozen in carbonite, you know, pops up everywhere.
Oh, sure.
There's a little one. I mean, a lot of people get them as the little action figure.
I have one of those somewhere.
And actually, for those Firefly fans, in a few episodes of Firefly, sitting on Mal's on the shelf in Mal's. There's a little one, a Han Solo frozen in carbonite sitting on a shelf in Mal's quarters.
That's cool.
Just slightly out of focus in the background.
That's kind of cool.
Just sort of as a nod, because obviously Mal's such a big, you know, is such a Han Solo character.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. I can't recall where I saw it, but I remember I one time saw Jar Jar Binks frozen in carbonite. That was kind of cool.
Well, you know, going into the props a bit, these movies are very famous for recycling found stuff.
Oh, sure.
Various things.
Oh, sure.
And so, you know, the bandolier on Chewie, you know, could have been anything, and the stuff that they used to make up that Mandalorian look.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just fun to see where fans go with that sort of
thing. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's fantastic, especially with the lightsabers. I mean, they're obviously such, like, you know, a key piece of, you know, history that, you know, you have some people, you got some fans out there with good eyes. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they got it down, figured out to, you know, where each one of their lightsabers came from, you know, what kind of flash tube it was, from which company, from which year, and, you know, down to, like, it's Luke Skywalker's silver lightsaber. It's got a little strip of it, and on it the flash tube itself says Graphex on it. Mm-hmm. And in order to cover that up, they put a piece of silver ducting tape over it.
Mm-hmm.
And these people have got it figured out down to like the brand of the fucking tape used to cover it up. And I mean, man, there's some devoted fans out there.
You love it that much, you know.
I mean, I love it, but man, I don't have enough time to go researching the different types of tapes. And then we go over to Boba Fett, and with obviously very clearly hearing it, because he's kind of popping a cap at good old Luke Skywalker. That's one of those things that I like about this scene and this movie. You know, you actually see some damage from the blasters. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you see people get shot with those, and you know, they're like, and you know, maybe it hurt a little bit. You know, there you see, you know, put a big old, you know, char on the wall and caught the place on fire. I mean, that's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
The good old scene with did I miss it? Yeah, I missed it. Fantastic. The scene with Jeremy Bullock out of his Boba Fett makeup. We just missed it.
Yeah, he's one of the...
He's the guy that is using Leia as a shield back there. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the name of the character. Actually, I had that autograph from him, and because, you know, I just thought it was kind of neat to see him not in the Boba Fett costume, so I chose that autograph when I got it.
We're now getting into, for our loyal listeners who have listen to us talk about our favorite sword fights. This coming scene made my top six. So it's one of my favorite fight scenes, but
sword fight scenes
in all of film.
And I think we've done just fight scenes, have we?
No, we haven't.
No, we've only done fight scene or sword fight scenes.
So we'll have to do that when we talk about Hong Kong film, I think.
Yeah, that'd be
all I can say. Chainsaws.
Chainsaws. Here's an interesting scene that goes to show you, some of the impulsiveness of Luke Skywalker. I mean, he's going to go up to Darth Vader, obviously, to fight him. And as you notice, Luke is the first one to get out his lightsaber. He is the one to initiate. He is the aggressor, yet he is supposed to be the good guy. And as you see, and Vader comes back with his, very slow, on the defensive, and yet he... You know, not to spoil too much, but he is the victor of this fight by quite a bit.
Again, we're calling spoiler on a movie that's 30 years old.
Yeah,
so,
30.
If you haven't seen it by now, that's
weird.
Your own fault.
Yeah. I have no problem calling spoiler on a movie that's a week old. So, I mean, no. 30 years, you're going to get very little.
And, you know, back into, I keep going into it, but the Japanese... influence that comes with this movie
is
genuine kendo fighting, which is the Japanese swordsman style, so samurai swordsman style. So,
yeah, I just kind of like the ease of this fight. See, there's that guy right there, Sheki, Commander Sheki is his name. Took me long enough, but well done. This is I don't know if this is funny, but it always kind of got a laugh out of me is when he unties Chewie and his hands immediately go to his throat. That's funny. He's like, it's funny. We spend the whole, first two movies with Chewbacca and Leia, arguing, and now he does this, and now they're buddies. Oh yeah, we get it, don't we, Chewie? And obviously, being the diplomat that she is, she's obviously going to be on his side. Right on. So in terms of cinematic history, we've been talking about a lot of, this movie's had some impacts on cinema. I don't think that there's quite any larger impact than the revelation of who Darth Vader really is.
And I believe David Moore or David Prowse, excuse me, I keep on calling David Morse.
David Morse.
David Prowse.
Not awful, but that's a weird ass Vader.
Is constantly trying has said in interviews that that he didn't know about that particular plot twist.
So. Yeah, and he said it on set as Obi-Wan never told you the truth. He killed your father. And Mark Hamill didn't know it until he was on set. And, they had a dummy page in the script, and I don't recall what it said. But Irvin Kershner pulled him aside and told him. And, obviously, and told him to not react to the dialogue, but to react to... his feelings about that. And when James Earl Jones was told, his immediate thought was he's lying. There's no way that he's really Luke's dad.
But that they really deeply wanted to keep that a huge secret.
And they did a damn good. It would never happen now.
No.
Well, as what was proven with the fucking prequels. I mean, there was no secrets with those. If you looked for them. It wasn't like in the days where you'd see it on the front of, Star Magazine or something. But if you looked for it, you could know every goddamn plot point about episode 3 before I did. So
one thing I want to touch on real quick is how this movie really did a great job of setting the tone and design for the architecture that you see in Star Wars.
Oh, sure.
And I think Cloud City is really, really big on that, just these different areas you see in Cloud City. You have the very clean, sterile white environments, and then you have this very industrial
environment. Oh, yeah.
So almost like, it's almost like a smelting facility.
Yeah, they're almost beating you over the head with environments. But, and when you're dealing with the clear archetypes or the bad guy is all black, it's kind of fun.
Well, even when they're they don't necessarily beat you over the head with them, but they don't have to do that.
Well,
in this scene, the environment just seems like it is a natural environment. On
sure.
That.
I mean, and at the same time, I mean,
it's a great set.
I mean, I don't know if I want to credit Lucas for it or anything, but it happens often in his movies where, you know, the environments that a lot of these characters are fighting in, a lot of the times mirror the characters themselves. Mm-hmm. Especially in the case of Vader, where you have, you know, this is obviously a very industrial, mm-hmm. You know, mechanical, imperial, mechanical yeah. environment. And the same thing happened at the end of Episode 3, when they were fighting on the lava planet. And you had all the explosions and the burning, which was, you know, obviously symbolic of, you know, his inner turmoil mm-hmm. and his rage that was on the inside of him. And I think that kind of stuff is neat. I've always liked it.
Yeah. And so to get the great use of lines and angles that they like to use in this movie, the egg that Vader sits in is very, you know, very angular and very very visceral looking. And of course that's a famous right there famous shot against the window.
The
big port window.
Yep. You know, you just kind of get the suspicion that, you know, Vader is kind of tiring of the situation right now. So
probably the director throwing all those things.
Oh, you'd think so.
Or they called in Sam Raimi.
Yeah. For him. You know, you're two, but get your ass in here and throw stuff at Mark Hamill for me.
We've heard you're good at throwing things at actors, but come on in.
Yeah, right. Actually, he'd be a lot older than two. He'd been 20 or so at the time, wouldn't he? Beautiful matte painting right mm-hmm. there.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I know it is because I've been told, but
yeah.
That stands up. I mean, that's something I don't
know. They really built that set.
Oh yeah, I bet. I mean, that's something, you know. I'm not gonna say it hasn't been touched up by, you know, digital technologies, but that one always cracked me up when she just goes around the corner and just knocks him on his ass. But you know, it's just such a. I mean, when you have an effect that works
out,
so well.
That one stormtrooper was the rebel infiltrator.
Yeah.
Like, I'm here to help. Ah!
That's so weird. You know, that's like an inboard but yet wireless microphone thing. I don't know why I'm questioning technology when this was an idea. R2-D2 mistaking a power terminal as a communication socket, as a computer terminal, is an idea that was recycled from the original script. It was a little idea they never really got the idea to, or never got the chance to use, and so they recycled it for Empire. Oh yeah.
Now he finds it right.
But it's kind of weird. He's using a different apparatus to do it. That first one was that little mm-hmm. angler thing. And that was his astromech dick. They just put into that computer terminal. And yet, you know, this isn't, you know, yet another great little film element. You know, the idea of, you know, 3PO being on his back.
Yeah.
You know, that, I mean, like, how often does that happen in a fight where you have a dismembered... Well, I mean, I guess it does in the war movies where they're, you know, pulling around their wounded buddy and that kind of thing. And
well, unless it's much more levity
that oh, they sure.
add to the scene, you know, and it's sort of the Abbott and Costello
oh, yeah.
Type of thing that's 3PO and... that 3PO and R2 are there's I mean
yeah they,
the straight man and you know it's entirely Laurel and Hardy is what it is.
Oh yeah.
just a great movie.
It is
and it's
so much fun to watch this movie. Meet. That the hairy
now,
beast
course,
would be
yeah.
the end of me.
And I love it with R2. You just sort of put in your own idea of what he's saying. You
yeah.
don't need to see what he's saying. You just sort of get it.
You get
across.
The idea. I mean,
suck it up, you little bitch. You
yeah. This is just such a great set.
I know.
Just mind-boggling. He doesn't look like he's smelling very good.
No.
All that Dagobah funk still on him and that kind of thing. Man, he's swinging that fucking thing like he's trying to hurt him.
So I know they photographically put in the effects for the lightsabers.
Well, post-production. Yeah,
post-production.
This one, they actually did it photographically in the first one. Well, actually, they ended up getting they shot it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But they ended up, you know, jettisoning that idea and then, you know, doing it with the rotoscoping like they did here.
Right.
And boom!
Off goes his hand.
Which is an ongoing theme in these Star Wars movies.
Dismemberment. It's always good.
We had a head loss, a hand loss, an arm loss. And
I'm sure it's part of the Star Wars drinking game.
I'm sure it is. And obviously, I mean, you don't have to be a philosophy major to understand that that's, you know, symbolic of Luke losing his humanity. And he lost it because he was fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And here we go. I'll never join you if you only know the power of the dark side. And so, you're a little bit younger than me. So you probably don't really remember a time in between these movies, because neither do I. That, you know, I mean, to you and me, Darth Vader was always
a little bit younger than you, meaning by, well, 3 months.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little. I didn't say no, it was a little bit younger than me. So, but we're essentially the same age.
Sure.
I don't ever remember a time when, you know, there was any doubt in my head that Darth Vader was Luke's father. And could you just can you imagine this? I mean, like watching this
revelation. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, for us, it's like, who's Kaiser Sose?
Yeah. Know?
I mean, it's
that. There you go.
It's that type of thing.
But it would almost be more than that, you know. I mean, because, you know, The Usual Suspects is what it is because of, you know, that whole storyline. And, you know, you have the whole entire world fall in love with Star Wars before The Empire Strikes
Back
comes out.
It'd be like finding out that that Voldemort is Harry's father. You know?
Yeah.
That would just be a
cultural phenomenon.
It would, you know, something that this scene right here sent ripple effects through pop culture and through
literature.
Literature, everything.
Yeah.
I mean, and just the name Darth Vader, obviously, is, mm-hmm. you know, Dark Father, is just...
Probably wasn't too big of a surprise in Switzerland,
in Germany.
Like, Dark Father, yeah.
And again, you know, it goes back to the...
he's all like, I guess everything's going to be okay now.
Goes back to the correlation of Nazis and the Empire. You know,
oh, sure.
Just using German, and German's such a... Whoa. Guttural language, vulgar.
It is. I mean, I'm sure the Germans are great people, but man, that's a weird language. Man, you ever notice that Mark Hamill spends a lot of time upside down in this movie?
I have noticed that.
You know, like,
and apparently these are weather vanes.
Yeah, yeah. The day he shot this was the day his son Nathan was born. I knew that as well. Because they did all this actually in one day, and they did it quickly because he wanted to go spend time with his new son, his first kid. So that's pretty cool. Oh shit, don't fall. I didn't know that, like, when I was a kid, I was a little bit confused about this scene because I didn't really put two and two together. I was wondering how the hell he could breathe because I thought that he was in a spaceship or something. Mm-hmm. But, you know, no, it just turns out he's. Yeah, and you know what? Maybe I still have that argument because he's pretty high up in the atmosphere.
Yeah, but again, you know, bringing scientific realism into the movie, it's sort of. Like, at this point, you know, you're here for the fun of it, and
yeah, we saw a 500-foot slug. I think I can my disbelief a little bit more.
Exactly.
Wake up, Leia. Hear me, Luke. They're all like, "Are you fucking kidding me?"
Like, ha ha, funny white woman.
Funny white woman. Poor old beleaguered Lando. He's lucky he didn't get his arms ripped out of their sockets.
Again.
Star Destroyer to prepare for my arrival. That's an added scene. This is an added scene. This is one that a lot of people, once again, a lot of people complained about. And I'm like, what the fuck, people? Pick your battles.
Yeah, some people... And we sort of touched on it here and there, but it's, you know, some people sort of akin these changes that they did with the special edition to, you know, how some people would be annoyed with the revision of the Bible. You know, it's like
Star Wars is awesome and everything.
Guys.
It's not the fucking Bible. On top of that, you know, childhood's over.
I do believe the Millennium Falcon added in there was new.
Yeah, I'm sure it would have been. That would have been a tough shot to do. You know, it's just like, I mean, you know, goddamn, guys. I mean, complain about Han or Han shooting first if you want to, but or yeah, Greedo shooting first or whatever the fuck. But
I mean, really, you want to?
They can complain about that, but as far as like that pickup scene, that's nuts. Yeah. Pick your fucking battles. And here we go. Here's a fun little scene, dogfight. But I do think that's weird that this movie is very unique, especially in Star Wars, that it's just it's almost so lopsided because like the big action set piece is at the beginning, mm-hmm. and then you know the yeah. You know like the, you know we have a nice badass sword fight here at the end, mm-hmm. but you know at the same time, I mean, it you know I don't know about you, I have watched the movies in chronological order.
Right.
And, you know, it just kind of feels weird going from, you know, the first Star Wars big fucking battle at the end of it to Empire big fucking battle at the beginning of
right.
it. So you're like, ah! And then you actually get to, like, the stuff with them hanging out on the ship and Dagobah and the Empire saying, oh, where do they go? Which way do they go? Which way do they go?
You sort of lose track of how much exposition this yeah. movie really is.
It's great.
Now, when they refilmed, or when they filmed scenes, the additional scenes of like Darth Vader walking mm-hmm. in,
was not David Prowse.
Yeah,
it was. I don't remember his name.
Who I think was annoyed that they didn't come back for him.
Yeah, well, he was annoyed they didn't come back for him in Episode 3, where he was played by Hayden Christensen. And I do know that I got an email from him. Well, I mean, not like, hey, Aaron, it's Dave, you know, but, you know, I was on a Star Wars list and he wanted me to sign a petition boycotting Episode 3 because, and I wasn't going to go that far, A, because there would have been nothing fucking stopping me from seeing that movie, yeah. and B, because, you know, I kind of understand what they were doing with it. I mean, obviously Hayden Christensen sucked and all that, but I think it's kind of cool that he played Vader in all of his forms. So. Regardless of the fact that he sucks or not. I mean, I'm not yeah. really going there.
I always was a big fan of the Super Star Destroyer. And it's
pretty big.
Look.
I think it's kind of cool when it crashes in Jedi. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, go tink on the surface of the Death Star.
It sort of gives you an idea of how big the Death Star is.
It's a big fucking thing. Yes, my lord. Lieutenant.
Minion, go!
And here we go. Yet another scene of the piece of shit ship that won't fly.
And of course, R2's like, dumbasses.
He's all like, R2-D2, you know better than trust. He's going to get, like, computer herpes.
Yep.
I like it. I do love the piece of shit Millennium Falcon. Just such a, you know, one, you know, yet well, eight.
The Millennium Falcon's another character in the movie.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, no one can argue against that. It's,
yeah, you know, you always hear people talk about how music is a character in a movie, and I don't know about that, but like certain times, you know, like you know, environments or or items are characters in a shit or characters in a movie, and certainly the Millennium Falcon is in there. That'd be a good top six, mm-hmm. you know, top six, you know, inanimate characters in yes. movies.
I mean, like the Millennium Falcon and various.
We would just end up having a whole bunch of cyborgs, you know. The Terminator.
Robocop.
Hey, he's got living tissue. Darth Vader. Destiny. What do you suppose the Empire spends on Vader polish a year? He's always so shiny. You ever notice that?
Well, you know those guards that follow him around all the time.
Oh yeah,
it's like, all right, you have a couple jobs here. One is to stand there, look imposing. One yeah. is to shoot anyone that does something stupid. Three,
shoot anyone else.
Polish Vader.
Yeah,
Polish Vader. Here's some turtle wax.
There's a silver leg, which is one of those fun little things that I don't know how many people really noticed from the prequels. Like, you know, that silver leg is left over from his silver body from Episode 2.
Mm-hmm.
I always liked that element. Great scene. Because everyone's like, oh god, we're going to die. We're going to die. Yeah, we're going to die.
It's like we're stepping on eggshells right now.
And then he just walks away.
Okay, I'm going to go eat a baby. bring barbecue sauce to my quarters.
That was Treat Williams, by the
Sweet
way.
And zesty.
Do you know that?
Hmm?
That dude that just looked at him when he's walked. Treat Williams.
Treat Williams, yeah.
Uh-huh. He played stuff like that. Hey, there's the Millennium Falcon. And then they are attached to the medical frigate.
Yeah, another new ship that they added.
Yeah, it gets blowed the fuck up in Return of the Jedi. Yes, in the last. I don't know about that one. The frigate,
yeah.
Gets blowed the fuck up in Episode 6. You know, I mean, I know we're talking
now,
about...
Now, the fun thing is...
Lando's wearing Han's clothes. That's weird.
Like, hey, I need clothing.
I know we're at the point, we're at the end of this movie, but a lot of people give Jedi shit. I don't know why. I like Jedi.
Yeah, you know...
Fucking Jabba the Hutt.
When I was a kid, when I was a little kid, Jedi was my favorite.
Oh, because sure.
It, you know, I think it's the most kid-friendly
one. Oh, sure.
One. When you grow up, you know, your tastes change, and sure. You know, you sort of start to realize...
I like Jedi an awful lot.
I love all three of them. They're great.
This always captured my imagination when I was a kid, the idea of the robot hand that looked like a real hand that had a door on it. I don't know. I was just always like, wow, that's fucking cool. Yeah, I don't know why. That was fucked up, apparently.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I just thought that was neat. Man, hell, I still think it's neat. Look at that iconic shot. What are they looking at?
A galaxy.
Which one?
I don't know.
Is that the Dagobah system?
No.
I'll meet you at the rendezvous on Tatooine. I do know that, you know, that's a matte painting, and they were just looking at a tennis ball. I know that that's something that Carrie Fisher talks about in the commentary or somewhere. No, it wasn't a tennis ball. It's just somebody waving, if I remember right. All right, closing thoughts on The Empire Strikes Back, Ethan.
Oh, it is definitely a movie that probably the first time that they sort of developed in a trilogy concept, you know, and this movie is obviously leading into another movie. It leaves a lot of things unanswered and sort of like, what's going to happen next? I can't think of movies that came before this that were clearly this is a part two movie.
Godfather
and there
part
will be
two.
A part three. Well, you know, but even then,
there wasn't necessarily a part three.
At the end of part two, there will be a part three. Uh-huh. Like, here is, well, obviously they got to go get Han and then defeat the Empire.
Yeah, they could have left the Godfathers alone and it would have been fine. So we got Mark.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we talked at the beginning about the credits being at the end of the movie rather than at the beginning. And I think he does that for all of them.
Yeah, he even did it on the new ones.
He even did it on the new ones.
Norman Reynolds.
VGA, no?
Yeah.
VGA be damned, ultimately.
You know, which is, you know, kind of cool. But at the same time, I don't know. Fuck it. I was just going to say, you know, maybe play ball a little bit, but nah, fuck that. Not when it comes to the artistic integrity of your movie. John M.F. and Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Watts, James Bloom.
Yeah, you probably recognize a lot more of the names here than I do.
Oh, sure.
Who's this Alec Guinness guy? I don't know.
Yeah,
anyway.
Some guy got an Oscar. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Des Webb. See, you notice that?
Clive Revel, voice of Emperor.
Yeah, that's not correct anymore.
Nope, that's not.
Kenneth Cawley, Julian Glover, Michael Shear, Michael Culliver, other officers, Oliver McGuire, Bruce Boa, Christopher Malcolm. You know what? I'm not going to read these guys the credits. Yeah, I mean, when I sat out to... When we started doing these top six lists, mm-hmm. I knew that at some point that the top six favorite movies was going to come up. And there was no doubt in my mind what my number one was going to be. I think I opened up with that. But nothing's ever going to misplace this. I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. you know, there's probably more important movies. There's probably better made movies. There's probably better directed, better acted, but
I think
there's no more important movie to me in my development.
Yeah.
You know, I think my movie snobdom grew out of Star Wars because I, you know, I think I consumed that as much as I could and, you know, still have that ravenous hunger. So I just had to go after the whole film world.
And a lot of people sort of sit down and go, well, what's your favorite Star Wars movie? And really, I think Star Wars, it's hard to not look at Star Wars
as a whole
than as an individual piece, you know, because this is a great movie.
Oh, sure.
And I think it's a good movie, but if you include it in the mosaic that is Star Wars, it's I think it increases the value of the movie.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, how much would it suck if this was the only one? I would hate this fucking movie.
Exactly.
If that's how it ended.
Like, man.
But because it's bookended, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Oscar god right there, Dennis Muren Dennis himself.
Yeah, Dennis Muren himself.
Can see, like, it's funny. You look at the
Joe Johnston.
You mean you look at the Star Wars credits and you see gods in their own field. Phil Tippett. He was a
Phil Tippett.
Uh huh. He was Jabba. You know, he completely did Jabba. And it's even more so on the Return of the Jedi credits, because, you know, we have those same names that we're talking about. You can also throw in there David Fincher. You know, he was a second AD on Return of the Jedi. He was George Lucas was a major champion of him, and so that's cool. I mean, and, you know, obviously, you know, 30 years, hopefully these people moved beyond their stations that they're in. You know, they're closer to, you know, their stuff.
That Joe Johnston was in the credits there is the Joe Johnston who was directing Captain America.
Dude, I knew that. You should have asked me. I knew that.
I was just double checking.
Okay, yeah. Joe Johnston, David Fincher. Lots of people.
Lots of people sort of started their careers at least touched this movie.
Oh, sure.
I mean, it's Industrial Light and Magic right there is, or at least used to be, it probably still is, you know, one of the...
It's a premiere. I mean, it is absolutely a premiere special effects house.
Special effects house. I mean, obviously... I will always remember their work on, you know, Jurassic Park. Granted, that movie is now 18 years old, which terrifies me. But
wow, it is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And I still look at those
fucking dinosaurs.
The visual effects in that, and they're still good.
Yeah.
And the visual effects in this are amazing. You know, for what the
especially considering they're 31 years old.
And that's another thing. You sort of look at this movie and figure out how absolutely timeless it is, because you really don't at it and go, oh, it's a 1980 movie.
I'm not shit talking here, but, you know, to me, the Lord of the Rings movies already look dated.
Yeah,
this doesn't look dated to me, except for the fashions. Sure. Looks like we're ending the end of our little commentary. My favorite movie ever made. So stay tuned and check out the Red Phone Zone. I'm Aaron.
I'm Ethan.
Let your geek flag fly.